Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic, Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us on the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And also check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Check out the different pages, including our Give page, which has some wonderful organizations and conservative causes, which definitely need your support. And I know for myself and for those who you'd be helping, they would greatly appreciate whatever you can give to help their cause. Now, tonight, I have where last Monday I was at a Tea Party meeting with Congressman Winstrup, who was discussing Benghazi and Obamacare, so we will hear that tonight. And then also we will be talking about all of the 24/7 coverage of Flight 370, the Malaysia flight, and of course what the media is not covering because they're spending so much time covering the Malaysia Flight 370. And so listen to the Tea Party meeting and our discussion there, Oliver, Benghazi, and Obamacare. And, of course, call in at 347-945-7428 to talk with me, the host, and, of course, our panelists, Jim Neighbors, Cindy Todd, and Kelly Mordecai, as well as our contributor, Dan Gray. And we will start the audio shortly. But I want to say thank you very much for coming and enjoy. And we will be bringing folks on after that. So if there's any people in the chat, let me know how the audio sounds, and then I'll make some adjustments if needed. And then I hear we will have a – thank you very much, Cindy, for the message. And we will also have an report on what's going on with overpasses. So at this time, I will go ahead – and play for you the events, what happened at the Tea Party event last week.
Thank you, George. Pleasure to see you all here tonight. Thanks for coming out. And, you know, we all could be doing something else, but we have enough concern for our country that we want to be here and try to be part of the solution. So I now have a year under my belt, first time in elected office. And it's very interesting. It's obviously far different from being a soldier and far different from being a private physician. You know, it is a couple of things. You know, when I'm not in my uniform and I interact with people, I can tell just by the nature of being in the military that there's a trust there. And when I'm in my scrubs or in my white coat, I'm taking care of patients, I can tell there's a trust there. But I found when I put congressman in front of my name that all bets were off. and really that's a big part of the problem today is our trust. Our trust is so low. You know, and what I've come to realize is how difficult and challenging the chessboard is. You know, every day, every bill, everything that you approach is a chessboard. You know, how can we move the pieces to try and accomplish what we want to accomplish? And it's difficult a lot of times because so many of the things that we've done in the House, it gets sent over to the Senate, and they're dropped on the floor. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work that's involved with so much of what we do, just to have to go into nowhere and So that's a challenge. And then it's a challenge when you have the White House that sees things differently than you do and acts differently than you do. So the 2014 elections are very important. They're going to be very important. There's great opportunities. You know, we really have to maintain the House. And the Senate's winnable. And that can change the dynamics quite a bit. It's not going to change the White House, but it's going to change things quite a bit. You know, and we have been able to accomplish some things because we have the House. There weren't any federal changes to gun control, and the Bush tax cuts were not repealed. I'm an advocate for maintaining Guantanamo as our prison until we have something in place that actually determines what our justice system will look like for those that are our enemies through terrorism. And, you know, I don't think that's going to happen under this administration. Many articles have been written on that. You know, I'm for border control, and I do hope that we act on that because I think that can benefit us in so many ways, not only for immigration management, but for national security. And also, we have a tremendous drug problem in this country and right here in this region. Heroin is huge. And when I talk to every sheriff in the 8 counties that I represent, I say, where can we choke it off the best? At the border. So a lot of things we can do there, but I think that without the House, we might be looking at 20-day amnesty. And without the House, you'd be looking at a Speaker Pelosi. About that. So, you know, because we have the House, we've been able to have an attempted oversight for things like the IRS and Benghazi. You know, the President said there's not a smidgen of any problem within the IRS. Well, if that was the case, I think Ms. Lerner would be more than happy to testify. And Benghazi, I'll talk a little bit more about that, but, you know, we've got oversight there. And we've been highlighting for the last several years the flaws of the Affordable Care Act, and those flaws are coming home to roost. We can now see what's taking place there. You know what? What is even more amazing, in spite of the odds, we've actually cut federal spending. The pace of federal spending in the last 2 years, first time since the Korean War. We're still in deficits, don't get me wrong. We're still spending too much. But at least we've done that. And I find it interesting, I saw my piece the other night, Daschle, Senator Daschle in 1999, saying, with this plan, we will have our debt paid off in 2014. This is 2014. I also saw a headline the other day, I was out in Portsmouth area, and a guy had the newspaper from the day Kennedy was shot. And this was an evening paper. So they had their paper all set to go, but then this happened and they were able just to get the headline and a quick story about it, and they kept every other story still on their front page. And one of the stories said the federal debt was reaching $315 billion and the Senate is ready to act. 350 years, look where we are today. And you know, when I look at the budget that the House passed under Paul Ryan, not the Ryan Murray budget, but the Ryan budget. You know, we were just talking about going towards a balanced budget in 10 years and paying off the debt in 40 years. And so, you know, when I was out at colleges, I was up at UC, I was talking to political science class, and I brought that up to him, and I said, look, when we're talking about doing that, paying off the debt in 40 years, I'm 55 years old. This isn't for me. This is for you. And our goal and those that serve should be to leave something better for the next generation. And I enlighten them about World War II generation, the greatest generation. Every man, woman, child, you know, young, old, rich, poor, everyone did something to pull this nation together during that time. And they were the greatest generation. It was a very selfless generation. And I said, frankly, I feel like I'm living in the most selfish generation. I need this now, and I'll just pass that bill along. And when I see people vote for emergency funding after a disaster, I say, fine, let's do that, but let's take it from something now. Let's pay for it in our time. But when we just add to the debt, that to me doesn't impress me. You make a donation to Matthew 25 Ministries, who operates with 1% overhead and goes to disasters and takes care of people. Now you're talking, coming out of your own pocket. But to merely vote, pass a bill on to the next generation, that to me is not compassion. We passed numerous jobs bills, energy bills, and again, they sit. But we're not done. We're going to keep going. And as everyone here knows, we're dealing with executive overreach. Just deciding what we're going to do.
The microphone and a pen.
The Affordable Care Act, obviously. I mean, I don't even need to go into that. Just, well, we're going to delay this, we're going to delay that. Seems like that was recommended by some other people, but ignored. And even when we passed delaying the business mandate in the House of Representatives, we said if the President wants that, we want that too. We'd like to delay it altogether, but we'll delay it a year. Let's go by the way it's supposed to work, where Congress passes a bill. The President said, oh, I veto that, but I'm going to mandate it. Can't make this up. But you know about the appointments, the National Labor Relations Board, creating the DREAM Act by mandate, the work requirement for welfare. Well, this week we're going to have Judiciary Week, and I'll inform you about a couple bills that will likely pass in the House, and one is presented by Representative DeSantis of Florida. And it's 3973. This bill requires all federal officials who stop enforcing the law to report to Congress the reason for non-enforcement. Well, this is consistent with what's already required in the Department of Justice when they decide not to uphold a law because they feel it's unconstitutional. Of course, that would eventually go to the Supreme Court. But this will require all federal officials to stop enforcing the law that they swear to uphold to explain why to Congress. Trey Gowdy, probably a lot of you have seen him on TV. It's another bill we're going to bring up. It's a procedure to allow the House or the Senate to authorize a lawsuit against the executive branch when they fail to faithfully execute the laws. And it addresses some of the procedural hurdles that go along with trying to bring a lawsuit like that. And I've co-sponsored the STOP Act that Congressman Rice put forward, and it basically directs the House to bring civil action, the House itself. Therefore, it'd be something that we could pass, and the Senate doesn't have to just throw it on the floor. We can act on our own. So let's talk a minute about the Affordable Care Act. And again, you know, you're seeing what we thought would happen. We thought that there would be difficulties. We knew that it would have a negative effect on business. We knew that it would likely lead to higher costs. You know what? We also knew that it was going to help some people in America. And that's who should have been addressed to begin with. Because you see, from the very beginning, before we got into all this, we should have been looking at who's uncared for in America. And the uninsured would fall underneath that. And how we go ahead and provide care. This bill assumes that there will always be providers ready and willing to take on whatever plan they put out there. And we already know that's not true. From the very beginning, we knew that this would expand Medicaid. You know what? I'm for safety nets. I'm for helping people that are down on their luck and trying to get out of that situation and to be there for them. But when we look at a program that has the highest mortality and morbidity rates, the worst results, and the least access to care, I don't think we should be bragging that we're getting more Americans into that program. We want to do something good, get more Americans able to be out of that program and into a better insurance and actually have access to care. And we're seeing that right now. And so when you don't have a primary care provider that takes care of you, you go to the emergency room, which is not the place to have your diabetes treated. And that's been the problem for years. It costs so much more. So we're not solving problems. We're still going to have uninsured. Medicare has for years, and I know this from my practice, has played games with how they compensate physicians. Well, you can argue how much that should be, but the problem is that the rules always changed, and they would hold up, and sometimes Medicare doesn't pay you for a few months, and so that offsets your business, and it makes it difficult for some continuity within your business, paying your staff, et cetera. And that's called the SGR, the Sustainable Growth Rate. And another reason that doctors were dropping out of Medicare. Now, if you're counting on Medicare for your research as you get older, you want your doctors to want to be in this program, because otherwise that's going towards the same problem, little access to care. So we do have a doctor's caucus. In the GOP, there's 17 doctors, nurses, and dentists. We meet regularly. And compared to the past, from those doctors who were there before me, we are getting listened to now. That those that decide how this process takes place want us to sign off on it. So we think we might have a plan. This week, we're also going to, I believe it's going to be this week, put forward a bill that repeals the SGR, give some continuity to physicians so they know at least what the pay will be like over the next 5 years. But we want to pay for that by delaying the individual mandate. And I know the president won't like that, but I think this can get through the House, hopefully get through the Senate. How does that pay for it? Well, it pays for it by the government not putting in the subsidies. And so there may be a solution there. We'll see where we're going to continue to fight to bring some stability to medicine and knowing that your doctor may be there. And that's on the Medicare side with that. But further with the Affordable Care Act, you know, the things that we said would happen are happening, where people get their hours cut or they're losing their job. And the effect it's having on businesses. But you know, Americans are tough. A lot of business people are just going to adapt and do whatever they can and try to go further. But it's not easy, and people are losing their jobs. So that's on the business end, but the care end is where it's really a mess. I mean, I can tell you, for those who don't know, by the way, Congress is in Obamacare. The president, the vice president, and their staff, they are not. So when they wrote the law, they didn't read. They put in the Grassley Amendment. It said Congress and their official staff to be in Obamacare and go on the exchanges. Congress and their official staff. Well, when it came time to implement this, a lot of people realized, well, you know, in the federal employee health program, the government paid for a good portion of that as health care costs. But we didn't put that in. So that's going to cost a lot. We'll lose all these employees to live in Washington, D.C. on the low pay, and then to have them pay thousands more for their insurance. They won't be able to take these jobs. So lo and behold, the Office of Personnel Management decided, well, you'll get the subsidy anyway. It's not in the law. They did it anyway. And so if you weren't comfortable with that, they came up with another scheme. And by the way, on a personal note, that subsidy that comes through, I am paying back to the Treasury. They came up with another scheme for the staff, and you can't make this up. They call us in on a Tuesday and say, you have till 5 o'clock on Thursday to decide what you want to do. There's a form here you can sign. You can put in any of your staff's name and say that they are non-official staff. Therefore, they can stay on the federal employee health program. It's by the law. So what does that mean, non-official staff? They work in our official office. All I'm telling you is if you sign it, they can go back on that plan. I said, I'm not signing a lie. And a lot of members felt the same way. But I can tell you, it was on the news. Senator Reid signed his whole staff. You can't make this stuff up. And where's the outcry on all this? And you just wonder, where are we really going? But as we're seeing the pitfalls of the Affordable Care Act, you know, it really shows to me someone biting off more than they can chew. Because, quite frankly, organizing a community of like-minded people is far different than leading a nation. Or putting together a business proposition that involves 1/6 of the economy when you've never put together a business plan before. And we're the ones that are paying for that today. You know, it's difficult. I'm telling you, as we go through these things, there are people there that assume that doctors will always be there, that will just continue to take part in this. And, you know, I have a friend of mine. He's an anesthesiologist. We went to high school and college together, senior year in college. He majored in engineering, co-oping. He has a 395. Did you ever think about going into medicine? I never really have. We'll look into that. So he takes the MCAT, the admission test for med school. He gets the highest scores in the state of Ohio. He's an anesthesiologist in Maine. He had a great career. Really loved it. And I said to him, if you were a senior in college today in the same circumstance, would you go into medicine? And he said, no. No. Because our lives, our business, our being able to take care of people is being controlled by too many outside sources. Reimbursements getting cut, and I can do other things. We have to be very careful about that. We have to be very careful about that, and we've got to make sure that we're incentivizing people who want to go into primary care. Because again, let's address who's uncared for in America and how we provide care. And there's a lot of ways we can do that. On the Benghazi situation. So we all know that there's questions about who responded to what, why was there not added security there when there was calls for it for some time. But where I got involved as far as hearings, people would say to me, have you guys dropped Benghazi? I said, well, my hearing that I've attended with Armed Services Committee have been classified, so I can't talk about it. And about a month or so ago, they declassified it. And I walked in the office one day, and they said, you're all over the news. I said, I don't know what I do. And I said, well, they declassified the hearing. They're talking about your questions. So I was questioning General Hamm, Carter Hamm, Sergeant Gaskin. And I said, you know, as a military person myself, I am very concerned that someone from the military would have been calling this an event a demonstration that got out of control as opposed to a terrorist attack. Seemed to me that anybody who watched that, maybe even a newest private, would be able to tell the difference. And I spent a year in Iraq, and I was stationed in place. We had demonstrations outside where we were, but we also had full-blown orchestrated attacks. And they are much different. They are extremely different. And I said, so was anyone from the military calling this a demonstration? He said, there might have been some talk before we got any information, but once we did, we were calling it a terrorist attack. And so within 15 minutes, we called it a terrorist attack. And I was with General Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And I was with Leon Panetta, Secretary of Defense. And they were on their way to a regularly scheduled meeting at the White House with the president. And they were going to inform him of what was going on. He said, no one ever called it anything but a terrorist attack. So we can assume that they went and that's the information that they gave to the White House. Matter of fact, in the Senate hearings, that's what was revealed. Yet the next day, Jay Carney is on TV and he says, from all the information we have, and I don't know where he got his, but from all the information that we have, this was a demonstration spontaneous because of a video. What happened in between there? What happened in between there? For 9 days, it's a demonstration that got out of control. When General Hamm said that all we felt this was a terrorist attack. So who was advising differently and why? Those are the questions we want to know. We just want to know the truth. So it's very interesting, when that got released, I'm on with Bill Hemmer, I'm on with Lou Dobbs, I'm on the Fox Sunday show. I got a conservative radio across the country calling. Did I hear from ABC, NBC, CBS?
MSNBC. I knew somebody who mentioned them, yeah.
Not at all. You know, I see there's other people here with gray hair. And I remember during Watergate, you know, I was 13, 14 years old. But I'll tell you what I remembered about that. Is I remembered that there was a media that wanted to get to the bottom and wanted to know the truth on behalf of the American people. And I also remember it was Republicans and Democrats that wanted to know the truth on behalf of the American people, because that's the country that we are. And I wonder where that's gone. I was talking to Paul Ryan about it one day, and I said, you know, during Watergate, and then I stopped myself, and I said, wait, you weren't born, were you? He said, no, I wasn't around for that. But that's disheartening to me, obviously, that there's not this strong quench for the truth from our media. They were always our watchdogs. And now, by and large, it's one station, and it's one side or the other. Look at what's going on with the IRS. You know, we just saw Lois Lerner again pleading the fifth. Well, if there's nothing to hide, then you would talk. And it seems that we have really accomplished. I wonder where our system's going when I see the week before the State of the Union address, with the president saying, I have a pen and I have my phone, and I will act on my own. And during the State of the Union address, Congress doesn't act, I will act. All Democrats stood up and applauded. Basically, he just said to all those representatives, you're not needed here. You're not needed here. You're irrelevant. And I'll tell you a story, and I know it bothers them, but I was so surprised when they stood up and applauded that, because one day, several months ago, probably about 4 or 5 months ago, I was on the elevator, and there were a couple of Democrats there. One I knew pretty well because he was a freshman and getting to know each other pretty well during orientation. And I was not listening to their conversation. But they got off the elevator and turned to me. They assumed I was listening. They said, you don't like them, we don't like them. I said, you talking about who I think we're talking about? He said, yeah, you may not like them for different reasons, but he doesn't listen to us either. He doesn't talk to us. It makes it very difficult to conduct the business of the country and to get anything done. Now, I know that they won't go out and say that publicly, but I know that that's the attitude of so many. So I was very surprised to see a standing ovation when he said, if you don't act, I will.
It's usually the power you have ever.
We've got a testy situation today with Ukraine, obviously. You know, I will support President's measures to take action, protect the people of the Ukraine with any type of restrictions that we can put on the Russian people. And hopefully we can solve this peacefully. Personally, I don't think the country's up for another invasion or military action. But I think we could have seen this coming. During the election, Mitt Romney was asked who he felt was the greatest threat, and he said Russia. And he got belittled by his opponents. But we'll be monitoring that closely and doing everything we can. But what is important, too, is that we maintain good relationships with the allies that we do have in that region. We continue to build that. You know, again, I'm on Armed Services Committee, and one of the things that we do with our National Guard is we team our various states with some of those countries that need our assistance in training, and to make sure that we build that relationship and build some trust around the world. And hopefully we will. I've been engaged with a few of the things that are outside of my committees that are important to me, poverty being one of them. And I've contended all along that we do things that don't incentivize people to come out of poverty. And you have to understand human nature. And I call it a sliding scale. And there's a system similar that they're using in Great Britain today that is having some positive effects. They've taken all their entitlement programs and put it together and faced the need. But what's more important than anything else, and this is the sliding scale part, is if you go and achieve and you go get a job, you're not penalized unless you get a job that's paid so much that you no longer need to be on our safety net. And so, for example, if you take a job as a clerk in a store, that you might lose some of your benefits, but you still come out ahead. If you become the manager of the store, you might lose a few more benefits, but you still come out ahead. And maybe someday you'll own that store. Maybe someday you'll own that store. and you don't need to be on these programs. You should be trying to get more people off of programs into independence and self-reliance. I don't know if any of you have seen the movie Cinderella Man. And if you haven't, I really recommend it. It's a true story. It's about a boxer named James Braddock in the 20s during the Depression. And he's doing pretty well. And he's able to feed his wife and kids during tough times. He breaks his hand and he starts to lose. He loses a few bouts. They decommission him, tell him, see you, we're done with you. He's fighting to keep his family. He has to give up his kids, trying to get work on the docks, anything he can get. And he takes public assistance. Well, there was a fight that was scheduled, and it was being canceled the day before, and so they went to him, they said, we'll give you a chance to get in this fight. He said, how much? I'll do it. I'll take that fight. He said, it's just this one fight, because I don't care, I want to feed my family. So he takes the fight, and he goes out and wins. One day's notice, he hadn't been training, so they said, well, we'll let you fight again. So he keeps fighting, and he keeps winning. And now he finds himself in a position that he's going to face Max Baer, the heavyweight champ of the world, a man who's killed two people in the ring. And they're interviewing him before this fight. He said, is it true that you were on government assistance and you returned it? And he said, I figure any man who lives in a country that's kind enough to help you when you're down should repay it when you're up. It's a true story. It's an attitude that we need to prevail. And by the way, he beat Max Baer and he became the heavyweight champ of the world and he was successful throughout the rest of his career in business. Russell Crowe plays him in the movie, I'm telling you. It's a good movie. But that line stood out to me when he said he repaid it. We got plenty to work on. I am not bored. I am not without things to do in Washington. I have a 4-month-old son now. And the stakes just got higher. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but we need you. We need you in these elections coming up this year. These general elections, be out there. If it can't be with your wallet, word of mouth. We're of serious purpose. We don't need to scream and yell to explain to our neighbor or a friend at work why we can do things better and how we can do it. And I do believe in this country, and I know we've been through tough times. If I think I'm having a tough day, I ask myself, would you rather be at home watching this, or would you rather be here? And I'd rather be there. And I know that I'm only one of 536 that make up the federal government, as far as elected representatives. But I used to be one of 310 million, so I'm a little bit closer. But also, if you look through American history, if you think about our very beginning, our founders committed treason. They committed treason. But they put together, they were not only those that fought, though, they were those that thought. And they put together a great nation. A few generations later, we have a civil war tearing our country apart. Far worse than the situation we face today. We pulled together. And we got it done and we survived. 3 generations after that, World War II. As I described before, one of the toughest times this nation had, and we came together and we saved the world. And we saved our own nation. Well, it's a few generations later now. And we have a responsibility. And I had the honor last week to speak out in Chillicothe. My district goes from Cincinnati, Hamilton County, all the way to Portsmouth. Cover 8 counties, and I had the chance in Chillicothe to speak at a prayer breakfast. And, you know, I talked about how the quotes of people watching Washington get down on his knees and pray with a sword at his side. The quotes from Lincoln, who said, I had no other recourse but to drop to my knees and pray to God. And Roosevelt, who on D-Day got on the radio and said, we need America not only to pray for today because it's going to be the greatest challenge, but pray every day. I think in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, where you see him coming out of church and there's a sign, it's the president's room, it says to pray. We've had a lot of divine intervention in this country. Miraculous battlefield victories that weren't expected. Abundant harvests when we needed it most. Natural resources that have helped this country flourish in so many ways, and why so many people have come from all around the world to come here and live under one flag. I look at the energy potential that we have today. What a feat that can be for our national security. And the energy factor that is being unleashed and can be unleashed even further is the answer to our prayers. We sing in the psalm, God shed his grace on me. We've had divine intervention. We need some more. It's out there waiting for us. We need to choose our battles wisely. You know, I look at people in the fight. Sam Johnson fought in two wars, POW in Vietnam. 90 years old, he's a representative from Texas. He can barely walk. And he's there every day. He's there every day fighting the fight. And I have the honor through my reserve duty to still practice at Walter Reed. And I'm in there and working the OR. There's not a battlefield injuries coming back as less, but I still see these men and women, double amputees, working to walk for the first time, battling to go up steps for the first time, and that's something to see. And they're breaking out in sweat. And none of it, no one is saying, I can't. No one is saying, I can't. They can fight their battles. And Sam Johnson can be there to fight with us each and every day. And I'm not going to quit either. And I know you won't either. Thank you for being here tonight.
Let me sit his voice back for a second. You know, as one of the 310 million, I'm glad you're one of the 536. And I think if you take a look around the room, the people that you see here that are elected, the judges, the auditor, you're seeing some of the best of the best. And we need people like that to stay there. Before we get to the questions for Brad, I did forget one thing at the beginning of the meeting. We recently got together with the representatives of the police department and the...
How can we get, and we don't have to involve, I hope it doesn't involve Obama, how can we get those, at least two men that fought for so long, how can we get them the Congressional Medal of Honor?
Well, as you have seen in the House of Representatives, the oversight committees are not letting go. And, you know, sometimes it takes a while to get to the truth. And we're climbing a mountain because not everyone wants to come forward and really state what happened. You know, I mentioned Watergate before, and certainly there was a lot of media involvement in both House and Senate, Republican and Democrat involvement. You know, sooner or later in this country, we find out the truth. And we're going to continue on that. And we're going to continue promoting that we want to get to the bottom and know the whole story. So the fight isn't gone. It's still there. And some of these theories are classified. So you don't hear them right away until some things are declassified. So let me just assure you, those families and those victims deserve us to continue to find out exactly what happened and why America was told something different. And we don't let it go. It's emotional, as you are.
Congressman Winstrup, on the Affordable Care Act and the most recent shift in the individual mandate to extending it out 2 years, my question was, is that official, and does it also affect the what used to be called on healthcare.gov subsidy, which is now on healthcare.gov called tax credit? Is that still, is it affecting that, and whether or not people will be penalized, or any of those things affected by that 2 year?
The 2 years has been the business mandate. We did 1 year and then another year.
Well, the announcement, well, maybe this has just been, you know, I think this is something that maybe it's not officially a law yet, but they're putting it, putting the, you know, they're actually trying to make a law rather than a signature or a mandate. But my impression was that the individual was going to be delayed 2 more years until October of 16.
Well, we are trying to delay the individual mandate and also to remove the fines for individuals. The business mandate was delayed a year, and then, you know, you still, I think, you get close to the election and people are realizing the effects of that, and so now you delay it another year. Why don't we delay the whole thing?
Or at least read it.
You know, I will say that there are things that we could have done before this president became our president. There are things in healthcare that we could have addressed as a nation, and we didn't. If nothing else, it brought it to the forefront. But it's not a good plan, and that's coming to fruition. And so the alternatives that we talk about are competition across state lines. You know, when you buy your insurance, car insurance, you may buy it from Geico, a lizard in New Jersey, right? But they're often coming out, hey, we have a better rate, and we provide more. I mean, that's what competition does. Everyone in here understands that. If you had an HSA, for example, health savings account, that you start as a young person and you keep putting into that pre-tax dollars, well, then you're more inclined to say, I can afford more catastrophic policy because I have this money saved up to pay for some of the bills if and when it occurs, not only for me but for my family as they get older. So if you start that even at a young age, it's got great benefit. And if individuals can and groups can come together and buy together and create their own risk pools and then be allowed to take their insurance with them rather than just tied to a job, you know, that just gives so much more freedom. But again, going back to those, you know, there, so many people in America were pretty content with their insurance and the situation that they had. And there are things we could do to improve on that. But we should have looked at who isn't getting care and why. And some of that are the very people that actually have insurance, i.e. Medicaid. And so how do we increase that? So, for example, I was on the Board of Health in Cincinnati for a few years. And we have two federal qualified health centers. Wanted to expand the hours to take non-emergent care out of the emergency room, let them divert over to these other clinics, where it's a whole lot cheaper, and now you're with a primary care doctor that says, here's what we need to do, and I'll see you again in 3 weeks. The emergency room doesn't do that. This was an opportunity to get people into a better type of care. And if they're healthier, then our costs go down. And basically, the hospitals didn't want to do that because they would lose some of the funding they get from the government for providing indigent care. And it costs so much more at the emergency room. So there's so many things that we can be looking at to make care better, even for those with greatest need. And actually, you know, you engage in preventive medicine and things like that. The opportunities are there. But the doctors that were in Congress when this law went through said, we weren't listened to at all. You know, we tried to get meetings with the White House. We tried to have some say, and no one would talk to us. Now we have the House, so we do have some say and some input to this. And we're going to keep fighting. And I can tell you that I'm encouraged because I've heard of about 2 or 3 other Senate and House candidates that are physicians. They're saying, I'm going to try and make a difference here. So hopefully we can do that and make a difference.
Brad, I'm going to change the subject a little bit. These investigative committees, it seems to me they're set up to fail. A question's raised. And whoever raising the question, he'll blow VA for a minute and a half, and finally he'll pivot over to the man that's being questioned for an answer, and he'll start off on all kinds of tangents and so forth. And the next thing you know, his 5 minutes are up. We forget all about it. We go on to the next question. 30 seconds, make the question. And whoever the hell's running this committee says you only answer the question if it takes all night. Why not?
I think you can credit C-SPAN. I think you can credit C-SPAN because for those that have been up there a while said the cameras in there have led to a lot more, hey, look at me, before they get to a question. That's on all things, not just on the oversight. But going to the oversight, you know, this is far different than, say, the O.J. trial, you know, where they were trying every day until the trial's over. Because, you know, the committees all have their other work that they need to do. And so the hearings are not as regular as another type of trial would be, so that sets it back. And some have been concerned in the House that if you turn it over to a special investigator, they might just say, we're done. Depends on who the special investigator is. And so that's a concern there. So Merrill Issa, if you've seen him, he seems determined not to bloviate, but to try to get to the truth. I don't know the next move strategically exactly after what happened this past week. I was wondering if the thing exists. No, I know. It's all committees. I'm there every day. Even the ones you don't see on TV, it even happens there, too. Difficult. But your observation is correct.
Hi, Congressman.
Hi.
Okay, so Obama, you know, he makes these decisions, these changes in Obamacare. Is it an illegal move, what he's doing? You know, if Congress isn't going to act, I'm going to act. Is this stuff illegal? And if it is, why are we putting up with this? Where's Boehner? Somebody has to have...
John Boehner is in a situation no different than me or anybody else there. When you have control over the agencies that are running things and you say don't enforce this law, that's what happens. Now, whether it's constitutional or not, that remains to be seen. Usually goes to the Supreme Court. So it's been explained to me that there has to be someone who can claim damages, and that is happening. So businesses that invested a lot of money and change their business structure, ready to implement the business mandates, all of a sudden says, oh, you know what, paper fools, we're not doing it. And they have some damages, and so they can bring a case to trial. And that is starting to happen. There's been a family business in Florida that's doing that. But some of the things that we're talking about this week will hopefully give us, one, more transparency, if you will, my guess is this will not get past the House. It'll pass in the House, but it won't go much further. We'll see. But we do want to try and give the House and the Senate or the option of saying, hey, what's the deal here if we're bringing legal action? But it has to get to the Supreme Court because that's their job to decide whether something's unconstitutional or not. Well, I mean, I can just tell you, my idea of an executive action is an emergency action, or something that's not written into law currently, and we need to act on it, and then maybe we come around and legislate differently. But this is something that the very person who's ignoring the law signed the law.
Well, how can the people in Washington, the Senate, the Congress people, how can they vote for us to follow something one way, and they can and not have to do it, or their staff not have to do it? That to me can't be legal. If Washington's telling us we got to do it this way, then
I'm a firm believer that, you know, Congress and the President needs to follow the laws that they pass. But currently, the Affordable Care Act does not apply to the President, Vice President, their staffs, and their administration. And you know, a lot of people think Congress is carved out of it, but we're not. But what was more ridiculous to me was that form that I mentioned earlier. But that was for the staff, not for Congress themselves, not for the members, but for the staff. And, you know, in that vein, too, if you're saying they're non-official staff, who do they work for? And if they go to get a loan to buy a house or something, who do they say they work for? I'd like to know that. And one of the legislators from Texas, who's a judge, he said, you sign that thing and I think you're opening yourself up for some significant legal action, and I agree, and that's why I refuse to sign it. And Mike, you know what? And I got a staff that gets it, you know, because they said, we understand why you're not signing that. We get it. And they feel that this country's future's on the line, too. And they're all in their 20s.
Brad, I want to ask you one question. I've probably got about 1,000 I could ask you, but I think the House is working on the bill that if Obamacare doesn't go through and they don't get the money, the insurance company, that will be paying the insurance company, right? Is there something, is that going to happen?
Well, that is written into the bill that basically the insurance company can't fail. But, of course, they've been put into a situation, they went along with it, they've been put into a situation where these are the policies you have to offer. And so the potential for failure is there.
So are we going to?
Well, somebody was up at, about trying to take that away, and I'd rather just repeal the whole thing, because if for example, if Fred Winstrup went out and said, we're not going to pay you for that, and then what happens is everybody's rates go up even higher. And everybody across the country, forgetting how bad the law is, they're saying, Brad Winstrup just tripled my rates again.
I thought the House had a bill proposed to.
Well, that's the discussion on that, but you see who's going to get blamed? So we'd rather just get rid of the law completely. It's between a rock and a hard place. When I started this talk, I talked about the chessboard. It's not appealing.
Hi, I'm from West Virginia, the word transplant here. I'm concerned about our coal miners in West Virginia. I'm also concerned that we have not done anything hardly about the pipeline. We have these resources, we should be using them. What are they doing in Washington?
Well, I'll start with the pipeline. One person is stopping that, because both the House and the Senate have come out in favor of the XL pipeline. And as far as the war on coal, we're fighting that. I've gotten to know Bob Murray pretty well. If you're from West Virginia, you may know who he is. And that industry is just being shut down. Look, I'm a doctor. I'm all for healthy environment and doing things right. But, you know, because of the regulations of even burning coal, we're exporting it. So if you really think you're helping the environment, we have more restrictions on how we burn it than who we're selling it to. We're all breathing the same air in this world. So none of this makes a whole lot of sense to me. Again, I don't see that changing under this administration. And yeah, here's another problem that we have. And this is over the... We're trying to reverse 60 years of bad moves by Washington. And by that I mean, if you think about what we have done, Congress over the years has voted to create agencies. And when they create these agencies, they pass laws and they say, the secretary will decide. So all of a sudden, this bureaucracy really has control over how the law is. They're basically creating the law. So when a constituent comes to me and says, hey, how come this is? Well, the best I can hope to do is have enough legislators that put the thumbs down on that agency. But otherwise, the agency's in control. And that has happened gradually over the last 60 years. And that's the bind that we're in. So in the House, we passed what's called the RAINS Act. And the RAINS Act says that if any regulation has a negative economic impact, and I've yet to see a regulation from the government have a positive economic impact, but if it has a negative economic impact of $100 million or more on the country, then Congress has to approve it. That passed in the House of Representatives. In the 112th Congress, and in this 113th Congress. Where is it? Senate didn't take it up. Which is interesting, because there's similar type bills from senators that they talked about trying to do, and they're not even taking it up over there.
I think that's it for now. We promised to keep it under an hour. Thank you so much for all of your time and all of your efforts.
Folks, and at this time, if anyone would like to chime in on anything that they heard tonight, we'll be bringing folks in from the audience in about 30 minutes. So give us a call at 347-945-7428. But first, I will be bringing in our folks here, and we've got calling in first Dan Gray, and then after that we have James Neighbors from Overpasses for America. So at this time, we'll open up your mic, Dan. Thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you?
Well, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's an unusual format to listen to the congressman. Very informative.
Great. Yeah, you know, I was going to play it on this past Friday, but I couldn't get everything together on time. But well, and I'm also working on something with Kelly Mordecai, and not this Friday, but I believe next Friday, he will be at a live libertarian event where he'll be reporting to the show from there at next Friday. So that I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah, you know what? Live events is something it's very difficult to do, but it's something really, really useful. Instead of just a bunch of us sitting around pontificating and, you know, bloviating, I guess that's the word, about current events and things and ideas, there's a lot more going on out there, and people are well aware of it. We've got events, not just meetings with information and rallies, but events of all kinds everywhere. And they're happening more and more often. I'm torn. There's stuff going on the same night, tomorrow night, and then Friday night. And Saturday, there's a choice of, do I go to this one? Do I go to that one? Go to the other one? Well, I've already committed for this week. But coming up in the near future, you know, the end of March, there's like five different awesome things, and I haven't committed yet, and I can't decide.
Yeah, definitely. It's good to hear that people are, you know, getting back into it, even though it's not, they're not all quite there. I mean, you know, we definitely can see where, you know, there's still more people who get involved around election time, unfortunately. But it does seem like there are more folks who are getting active, even on the outside of, you know, the election season. So let's hope that grows, because basically, I mean, frankly, we need them to grow to much larger numbers, even through, you know, outside of the election season. So that's going to be very important, especially for conservatives, because it does seem that the liberals do work year-round every year towards their aims and their goals. But
well, you know, I have to take exception with just one thing, which is the election season, which is what is expected, that sometime after August, especially during a presidential election year, but not in the off years, for a month or a month and a half, maybe 2 months, people pay attention a little bit to what they see on the mainstream media. However, this is the election season in Pennsylvania, and we're already fired up. And it's not just, you know, the big races. It's state senators and people for county committees. Everywhere you turn, there's people getting fired up that were never really involved that much before, and the ones who were involved before have been stepping up and becoming more involved and more influential. I won't say that we're leading necessarily, because we're not trying to take people someplace that they've never been or that they don't want to go. This is where people say that they want to go, which is less government, less intrusion, less taxes taken from us, more liberty, more choices of how to run our own lives. That's what everybody says they want, and we're simply trying to show them what we've already figured out, and quite frankly, not everybody agrees 100%, which is actually not only very healthy, but it's the way it should be.
Right, and even though we, you know, when we've talked about this on the show before, is that even though we do have, you know, some differences on different topics and things of that nature, there's certainly, you know, plenty out there that we have commonality that we can work together, especially on, you know, the most important issues.
That's true.
And so at this time, we'll go ahead and we'll bring James in as well and see what his comments are. And so we'll go ahead and start our roundtable discussion here. And it's also 347-945-7428 to let the folks in the audience, if they'd like to chime in as well. So at this point, I will go ahead and open up your mic, James. Thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you?
I'm doing good, Robert. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Thank you very much.
Well, that was a sadly educational audio clip you played there. I mean, really, the questions, what you got asked of them were so softball, it was just sad. I was kind of disappointed at that Tea Party group that they didn't ask the straight-up question is, why haven't they begun impeachment? I mean, honestly, you know, why didn't they ask what he talked about Benghazi? Why didn't they ask him, why were there 400 surface-to-air missiles there, and there was no security to speak of? And then he just sounded almost apologetic about Obamacare when he was talking about how, oh, it would help some people. And, you know, instead of talking about, you know, you're focusing on the obvious detrimental effects it's already having on this country. I mean, you know, he touched on it. But, I mean, for a guy that was talking in front of a Tea Party group, I was just disappointed at just how politically correct most of what he said was. I mean, we have got to quit softballing the reality of what's going on in this country these days. You know, political correctness is thought control. And I'm really, it's frustrating to see, you know, these politicians that, you know, that go before groups that are, you know, the, you know, Tea Party groups, conservative groups and whatnot. And, you know, it's trying to think of what the word is. It's like they say just enough to shut them up and nothing else. And, you know, I don't know who this guy is. I'm not familiar with how he votes or anything, but it's just, you know, we have got to ask the hard questions going on.
The gentleman speaker was Representative Brad Wenstrup from the 2nd District in Ohio.
Well, I mean, you know, you would think being from Ohio, he'd been speaking out against Boehner. I mean, come on, the guy, you know, he said, right. Well, you know, it's, I mean, come on, Pelosi, Boehner. I mean, about the only difference is that Boehner cries more.
James, I want to say one thing, which is that this is a difficult thing for politicians. I'm not excusing any of them, but I have been working with, in a nonpartisan way, for those people who are concerned about my Hatch Act job, just giving advice. And the advice I'm giving them is, don't piss everybody off with your views if the views aren't something important. There's a bottom line to all this. The bottom line is liberty. The bottom line is less government, less taxes, more freedom. But there's all these issues that people have concerns with. And we've discussed this before. With these issues, you risk alienating an entire segment of potential supporters and voters. You risk really riling up a bunch of people who are going to be motivated to work against you if you don't use, without lying, use a little
tact.
Bit of tact there. That's exactly the word I couldn't find. As an example, the marijuana issue is a big one with some people. Some people hate the idea. Some people love the idea. Now, there are a couple of candidates who've asked me my take on this. And, again, as a guy who used to smoke all the time and don't touch the chronic at all anymore, I said, look, why don't we do this? Well, if they ask you those questions, simply reiterate your main point, which is liberty, which is cutting taxes, whatever your main point is, and then mention the marijuana issue and say, look, there are only it's a small issue compared to what we have to do first, and there are other states who are addressing this issue. Why don't we give them time to see what works and doesn't work, and why don't we give us time to do the main things that we need to do? Within a few years, we should be able to accomplish the main things that we need to do, or at least get well along the way, and we should be able to see the evidence of what works and what doesn't work in states like Colorado. At that point, it would be appropriate to address this issue and see what we want to do here in our state. Now, this doesn't anger the people who are really against it. It doesn't anger the people who are really for it. What it says is that you've got other priorities, that you're willing to keep an open mind, and that you're going to be making decisions based on evidence. this works. Unfortunately, politicians get to the point where they don't want to make anybody upset about anything. So they talk and talk and talk, and they talk around issues. What is nice about some of the people who have stepped up, more than nice, it's refreshing, like Alan West, for instance, is they are willing to be blunt. But by being blunt, they're not only gaining support among those people who are like-minded, they're also ginning up opposition, not only from people who are predisposed to be opposed to them, but also from people who might well be their supporters. I don't curse if I can help it, especially in writing on Facebook or things like that. When I see people making really, really nasty, nasty comments using curse words and odd Photoshop pictures, yeah, some of it's funny to me. I laugh, but I either don't comment or try and bring things back to a respectful point of view. There is a lot going on that people have legitimate arguments with each other about, and turning off the other side by simply calling them names is not helpful. There are plenty of people in this country, half voted for Romney and half voted for Obama, half plus a little bit if you believe the exit polls with 108% turnout in some of the areas in Ohio and Pennsylvania. But most of those people on both sides are not ideologues. They haven't thought all of this stuff through. They're not really stupid. They just haven't been paying attention because they've been busy with their own lives and they've been fooled. I don't want to lose any of those people. I want them to know that whatever I say, whatever any of the ones who they will hopefully listen to say, is something that they can check out for themselves and know it's true, and that I'm not going to insult them. So this congressman, yeah, he could have been a lot more blunt, but I understand where difficulties come in when he's trying to appeal not only to the Tea Party, but to a much larger base of electoral voters who really, quite frankly, are uninformed and haven't really made any opinions. They just repeat what they hear.
Well, you're absolutely right.
Real quick, James, hold on a second. And the folks who did ask the questions, and they were there just people straight from the audience. I mean, those are just, your everyday folks who are concerned with what's going on in the country, asking them. Yeah, they may have been softball questions. I wouldn't disagree with that. However, they're just, folks who come there and, want to listen. Most of the folks there were older folks. I'd say, the average age there was probably in the late 50s, probably, with some younger folks being, outliers. But that was, most of the people who were there were, of that generation. And then, as I said, they pay attention some, but they probably don't look into things as in-depth as we do. So, and kind of a defense to them, they're not like reporters or anything of that nature. Now, I wanted to ask a question of them. The question I wanted to ask, because he did mention about the 2014 elections, I wanted to ask, but unfortunately they limited how many people can answer or ask questions there. So I wanted to ask him, how important he thought the primaries, and you mentioned Dan, that it's an election season already, how important they feel and a lot of people with the primaries don't even, especially in an off season, don't really even pay much attention to them and don't realize, frankly, how important in an off year election these primaries really are. And so I wanted to ask him, what his thoughts were, but unfortunately I didn't get that opportunity. But I have been in contact with his district communications director to see about having him on to the show. I have not heard from them yet, but I think I called in a weekend, and it's probably a bad time to call people, but I wanted to at least get a call out to them just to put it in their memory, so when the next time I call, they'll remember. So go ahead, James.
Well, I mean, I understand, that politicians have to do their best to please their constituents, but there's a difference between, waffling on issues and being a statesman. You look at Trey Gowdy, for example. you know, he says things that obviously are going to make a whole lot of liberals not very happy with him. But the things he does aren't, it's almost as if, you know, he's not so concerned with the longevity of his career, but with the with what's going on with the nation. And you know, Blaze called Lerner out in the hearings and whatnot like that. I mean, I'm still waiting for them to find her in contempt of Congress. But what do you know? Just like when they, you know, their committee started to make a little bit of headway on Benghazi. Oh, look, it's that IRS scandal. Except the IRS scandal was already a year old. Then they start making a little headway on the IRS scandal, which supplanted the Benghazi scandal. And then, oh, what do you know? Now we've got this thing going on in Crimea, which isn't any of our business. You know, oh, and then, oh, there's an airliner. Let's distract everybody. Distract. Every time they start to make a little bit of headway, it's another distraction to the American people, and the media is fully complicit in this, if not the main the main cause of these distractions. Any time any bit of anybody in Congress starts to make some headlines about how the policies and actions of President Obama are bad for America, whoa, look, there's a squirrel. And it gets old.
Yeah, and that's definitely why I put in the tub tonight, Flight 370, what the media is not covering, because I think, you know, all the 24-hour, you know, coverage they're doing of that missing plane, I mean, it may turn out that it is significant, especially if they look closer at the two Iranians that got on with fake identification. And also, I heard tonight that there are some speculating that the plane ended up, and it's all speculation, of course, at this point, ended up in Pakistan, and supposedly they're, you know...
Listen, I want to tell you what's not speculation, all right?
Okay, what is it talking about? Okay, real quick, let me get
this
out. Is that, you know, loading it up with, you know, some kind of weapons, maybe even weapons of mass destruction, as I said. You know, I haven't heard any proof on that yet, but that's one of the things out there. And two, I think that what's going on in Crimea with Russia, I really think that that's what that Flight 370 is covering up, is they're spending all the time on that, whereas they're not spending, I don't think, nearly enough time what is going on over Crimea and Russia, because I think that can definitely cause us some trouble here in the United States. Go ahead, Dan.
All right. Well, first of all, let's discuss what is actual and not just speculative. There are satellites covering the entire United States, the entire world, the entire Pacific. All right. The U.S., China, and Russia, and a number of other countries have satellites, but those three major players cover everywhere. And the area where the plane disappeared is the busiest oil transshipment site in the world, and none of them know. Now, wait a minute. No one was watching, or are they just lying to people? Now, look, they're not lying to each other. Each of these intelligence agencies is well aware of the capabilities of the other, but for some reason they've decided not to share this with us and to spend an inordinate amount of time talking about one jetliner, which, you know, I feel for the families of the people who are on that, and there were a couple of people from Pennsylvania. I don't know what happened to them. I don't know what's going to happen with this jet if it hasn't crashed. But during this period of time, there have been any number of stories which should have had national traction to deal with Crimea. Well, at the same time, which they're not mentioning on the regular news, Scotland and Quebec and Venice, hell, even California, are discussing referenda to separate. Scotland's voting on it. Quebec may vote on it. Venice is voting on this. There has been no objection to other referendas. There was a 95% vote, and I think it was an honest vote in Crimea to go with Russia, which was never really part of Ukraine. But when we look at the Ukrainian situation, this is a transshipment site for energy as well, not with giant supertankers, but with natural gas lines, Europe depends on the natural gas that's coming out of Russia. And it, I will remind people that one of the first things our current president, the occupier in, at 1600 Pennsylvania, did was he repudiated a treaty with Poland for a missile shield.
Mm-hmm.
People are also probably unaware that he and his National Security Administration disarmed the Ukraine. Not only nuclear weapons, they got them to give them all up, but, you know, the ones that were legacies from the old Soviet Union, but conventional mm-hmm. weapons as well, heavy weapons. They don't have any means of defense. So here he is pretending to support the Ukraine, pretending to write another red line in the sand, which is meaningless because today he ruled out the military option, which I think is actually wise, but I don't think he ever intended any red line. Will everybody please try and remember that little open mic gaffe when Obama
yes.
leaned over to Medvedev
very important.
And said, please pass a message to Putin that I'll have more flexibility after the election.
I thought he said that straight to Putin.
No, it was to Medvedev, who was Putin's...
okay.
I was going to think of mention a word which is really not appropriate for radio, but his stooge, there's a good word for it. During this last week, there have been Israeli rockets fired from Gaza into Israel and a threat of a response. There was a National Guardsman arrested in an al-Qaeda-linked subway bomb plot. During this week, Obama said that there will be no delay in the individual mandates for Obamacare, even though he's choosing to disobey his own law and everything else, and that he won't deport illegals' families if they sign up for Obamacare. In Venezuela, there's turmoil, shortages of basic commodities. They can't get flour, milk, diapers. There's winding food lines in a country rich with oil. And Chavez's handpicked successor, Maduro, he's unleashing force on ordinary people. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to get reports of massacres out there. I've seen video. One of my good friends, who is known as the International Libertarian, he's a very intellectual fella, and he spent a lot of time living in Venezuela, and he has a lot of friends and contacts there, and he's been posting videos of what's actually happening in the streets there. This is gripping video with armored cars and Molotov cocktails and gunfire and things on fire and ordinary people just in a place we don't ever want to be, and you don't see it on the news. And this is just a tip of the iceberg. They just revealed that the NSA has been archiving all of our calls in detail, not just the metadata. They have them all. It's been mm-hmm. it's admitted to. It's not in the media. NASA is predicting the fall of civilization. They're claiming that science is behind wealth redistribution, and professors are calling for imprisonment of climate change deniers, as they call them. We've had the snowiest, coldest winter in the entire country in many places on record or close to it. People are burning wood, and the EPA has banned wood stoves. In Connecticut, Maryland, New York, New Jersey, they're talking out-and-out gun registration and confiscation, and their schemes are proceeding at a furious pace, and nothing's on the media. The ATF and Department of Homeland Security ignored a federal judge's temporary restraining order and raided a California gun shop, not only to seize these alleged AR-15 receivers, but mm-hmm. they took customer records. And
right.
this is the worst of all, because I'm almost done
right.
with this rant here.
Oh, go
but
ahead.
The United States just ceded control of ICANN, ICANN, which is the International Convention on the Internet. We ceded control to the International, which is basically 100% Russia and China. We're giving up our control of the only means that we have of communication without censorship, without too much censorship, we hope, to foreign entities. All of this took place in the last 4 days. 4 days. And
wow.
you know, my wife, who is not political, watches the news every evening. And I'll sit with her because I like to spend time with her. And I'll try really, really hard not to yell and throw things at the television set. But all of these things, when I discuss them with her, this is the first time she's heard about it, and she's not a stupid woman. She watches what they present. And you don't see it. I work with all these people who are not stupid, and they are unaware of any of this because it's not being presented. Instead, we all are speculating about what may have happened to one jetliner with 300 people on it. I'm done.
Right. No, when it comes to what happened there with the gun store raid, Kelly is looking more into that topic, and he's going to be calling in later on this evening. He said I had a conversation with him. He's going to call in later on this evening to give us more information and more details on what happened over there. So we'll go ahead and, James, if you'd like to respond to any of that, and then we're going to bring Cindy in. And then for anyone else you'd like to listen in or to chime in, believe it or not, we only have 40 minutes left of live time left here on the show. It's gone pretty quickly. And then we'll go into the extended version. Call in at 347-945-7428, because if you don't call in before the stroke of midnight here Eastern time, in the next 39 minutes, then unfortunately won't be able to listen to the remainder of the show. So go ahead, James, and then we'll bring in Cindy.
Well, you know, Dan, I loved how you actually saved that for the last with the, you know, turning over of the control of the Internet. I mean, good grief. Look how many people in America live, eat, and breathe just on Facebook. You know, and
yeah.
You know, and it's but yet, wow, it's nowhere on the news that even though, you know, Al Gore invented the Internet, you know,
yeah,
even though, I mean, that was our baby. I mean, it was created by the Defense Department, and you know, and yet, you know, we turn it over to an international oversight. And we just ceded control of it. And if you had put that on the news, I mean, there would have been an uproar. I mean, even people, I think, that didn't give a flying, you know, hoot, they didn't give a hoot about anything political, but you tell them that, hey, your Internet was just turned over to a group of people that can censor the things that you get on the Internet and change the way the Internet works in a way that you may not like, they would probably start getting involved in at least that. If nothing else, they would get involved in that. And, you know, but I mean, that's exactly why they didn't bring it up. That's why you don't hear about...
And if we lose the Internet, if we need to lose the Internet, we're going to be... you know, lost with doing our own, you know, research on what's going on in the news, because then we'll be limited to what those talking heads have on TV. Go ahead, Gene.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, let's face it, we already know we're being watched here. And of course, you know, then Dan, of course, showed us just how deep that rabbit hole goes. You know, the ATF, I'm thinking about guns now, but, you know, the NSA, well, they're supposed to not be keeping permanent records, but then, well, what do you know? Just like everything government, they say one thing and they're doing something else. And, you know, and then what about all of the gun owners in, say, let's just say Pennsylvania? There's a whole lot of them. How many of them don't know what's going on in Connecticut right now? And how many of them would be outraged if they knew that the Connecticut governor was talking about going door-to-door and confiscating guns? What would they do if they knew that there were about, you know, well, I've heard upwards of 300,000 people in Connecticut that are now felons because they refused
to register
their firearms.
What most of them will do if they knew is nothing, and it's unfortunate.
Well,
however, it doesn't require everybody. You're part of the 3%, and I don't know what the actual figure is, but a small group of people can win everything. The progressives approved it because they destroyed everything we built with a small group of people, not the people who think they're progressives. The ones who are actually behind the scenes pulling the levers are the ones who are responsible. The rest of them, they went along with Hollywood and the news, and you know, they were too busy, and it sounded good, and imagine all this good stuff with John Lennon's song. But
right, guys, I hate
but
that
we
song.
Did win in my township with one vote, and just yesterday, a historic first in Pennsylvania. A state Senate race was won on a write-in vote by a Tea Party candidate. And it was, I told Bob this in the, you know, on the phone earlier. There are articles out there, and there's links on my Facebook page. But the bottom line on this one was the Republican establishment, the RINOs, who keep voting, saying they're conservative, and yet voting for more intrusion and more taxes and driving business and liberty away, they tried to pull a fast one and get one of their little cronies in there. A nice fella, I suppose, but he's a crony. That's the way he's always voted. I go by his actions, not his words. And one of our guys, who is a self-made millionaire, he owns a number of businesses, employs a lot of people, he stepped up and he put his money where his mouth is. And in a write-in campaign, he took the equivalent number of votes of both the Democrat and the Republican in this special election. And now he is our state senator, but of course this fast one they tried to pull with the special election means he's only going to be our state senator until the fall, because we have a new election coming, first the primary and then the one in November. So a small group of people can do it. In this case, it was about 11,000 people in York County, Pennsylvania, who elected Scott Wagner, 11,000 people. There's a lot more than 11,000 people who live in York County. It's a big county. There's a lot of people who live there. It's right next to Maryland. A small group of people are aware, and that small group is growing. And it's not just the same people becoming more radicalized and more aware. Yes, that's happening. But every single day, I'm getting brand new people who are saying, really, is this going on? How is this going on? What's going on? And they've read some headlines, and they've seen some internet memes and some, you know, posters and stuff like that on there, and they said, I want to know more. And I'm providing them, a lot of us are providing them with good information. And then, of course, things like what James is doing with these activities is providing them with an opportunity to share their new views on a very wide scale. Because, you know, you post something on the internet, you may get, you know, 10,000 people look at it. That's great. On the other hand, when they see you in person standing on an overpass with a sign that wrenches them in the gut and they go, I agree with that, that makes more of an impact.
Well, you know, then the ones we're really trying to get to are the ones that go, who's Benghazi? You know, what's Extortion 17? What is this Fast and Furious? You know, they think it's a movie. And that's really the ones that we're trying to reach the most, the ones that, and you know, they're just trying to live their lives. I can't fault them for that. I sincerely wish they would be more engaged in what exactly is going on in their lives, you know, because like I've told people before, that they say, well, I'm not interested in politics. I'm like, well, that's just a shame, because politics is very, very interested in you. That's like ignoring the guy that's stalking you. You know, you're sleeping in your bed, and you look up, and you see somebody watching you in the dark. Oh, whatever. It's no big deal.
Right.
You know, I don't care if they're there. You know, and if you look at the detrimental effects that they have on all of our lives, it's no less perilous to ignore politics than it is to ignore that creepy guy watching through your bedroom window, you know. I don't expect everybody to go out and you know, just become Mr. or Mrs. you know, educated. I understand that people have lives. I mean, I've had people that were in overpasses, were just absolutely wonderful people and very engaged, and life showed up, and they had to step away. And there's no fault in that. But just, you know, look beyond what's right in front of your face. And you know, it's an interesting analogy, and it's so very apt. But once you see the Matrix, you could never go back.
Go ahead, finish that up, James, and I'm going to bring Cindy in.
Go ahead, Robert.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Cindy. It's great to hear from you. How are you? Yeah, she unmutes her mic.
Hi, Cindy.
Are you there?
Hello, Cindy. We know you're there.
I guess she dropped the line instead of unmuted, but I'm sure she'll call back in here very shortly. Yep, there she is. How you doing, Cindy? You did it again, didn't you?
I start to fumble around with the phone.
Just don't do that at the top of the hour, because we won't be – well, we could get you into a three-way call like we've done in the past if we have to. But and speaking of that, if anyone would like to listen in or to chime in, give us a call here at 347-945-7428, and you can speak with us here and join our round table discussion and be a part of the conversation. So go ahead, Cindy. I know you've got some things to report.
Where do I begin? Well, you guys have been doing a great job. I didn't even really need to say anything. I just want to say, James, we had a great overpasses rally for our Daytona Bike Week. We were on the walkover. Have you ever been in Daytona, James?
No, I have not.
All right, well, we were on the walkover. There's a place where, you know, you can just walk over. You can't ride a vehicle over it, but you walk from the parking lots over into the racetrack. And we had our signs up and everything. And the first in the morning, we weren't getting a lot of feedback. And we were kind of wondering why, but I think we figured it out later. We switched around, and we got on the other side of the overpass and got the cars going the other way, and boy, you should have seen how they started reacting. Apparently they could read our signs better on that other side, something to do with the sun. But anyway, you can't believe how awesome it was. You have to put your signs like through a fence. There's a double fence there, and you had to put the signs up and hope that they could read through two fences to see the sign. But anyway, we had, of course, a million bikers in town, and they were just so supportive. Unbelievable the amount of black people that are now beeping and raising their hands. And just the overall day was really awesome. And I just wanted to encourage everybody that's listening to this, get on the Internet, get on Facebook, find your local overpasses chapter, get involved, because, you know, just like we here on this show, we have people surrounding us that we know we're not alone. But there's a lot of people out there that all they do, they never talk about politics with anybody but their husband or their wife, and they sit in front of Fox or CBS or NBC or whatever, and that's the only way they get their news, and they're thinking things, and they think they're the only ones that feel that way. And so I think part of the success of overpasses is that people are saying, wow, you know what, I'm not alone in this. I'm not alone in how I feel.
There's another way that people do get their news, and it is a personal way. That's from your friends, your coworkers, your neighbors. Even if they don't want to talk about politics, there are ways to do it without preaching at them about issues that they do care about. Now, you can well imagine that everywhere I go, that's what I end up talking about. There's always a segue. You're at the convenience store, the price of the gas. It's cold out, the global warming, whatever it is. And I work with black folks. I have friends with black folks. I know people all over the place. You mentioned that, you know, it's really heartwarming to see them reacting and cheering. Well, I got news for most of your listeners out there, unless you happen to be black, it's not what the media portrays, and it's not what the election results would suggest. Remember, those targeted, and I can't prove this, but those targeted voter fraud areas, like Cincinnati, Cleveland, Philadelphia, where they had 108% turnout with 100% of the vote, that mm-hmm. is statistically impossible. And I talk with people who work jobs, who raise their kids, who go to their churches, who take care of their homes, who happen to have a little more melanin in their skin than I do, and they are with us. They are not voting for this jerk and his cronies. They did the same way the Irish would vote for the first Irishman that came along, or the Jews would vote for the first Jew that came along. Well, look, it's one of our guys. But they're not stupid. They don't vote for somebody a second time or a third time, whether they're Republican or Democrat, if that person is doing things that harm them. And they may be unaware of all the sausage-making and the details with the lies, but they see the results. And the fact is, you can't say that things are getting colder because the globe's warming up and have anybody but an idiot believe you. You can't say that the economy's getting better because the unemployment rate's dropping, and the unemployment rate's dropping because all these people have been, as Pelosi said, freed of their jobs. You
well,
can't tell
course,
them that
Dan,
because they've
you
lost
know.
Their insurance or are paying a hell of a lot more for their insurance and worse insurance, that suddenly they've got better insurance. They see the disconnect. And that's a really good thing. I am so grateful to the progressives for getting close enough to lose their careful planning and their incremental status and really going for it. I'm glad they're going for it. I want them to go worse for it. I want them to start rounding people up because that's what it's going to take.
I agree with you entirely, Dan. I would just
James, I want to make sure that I'm sorry. I just want to make sure that Cindy got all her points out, and then we'll bring it back to you. Cindy?
Well, no, but I can do one thing at a time. Let them let James go ahead and
sure,
respond.
I just want to make sure.
James,
go ahead.
I'll jump.
Go ahead, James.
I'll jump in.
Okay.
Well, in a way, Obama being reelected was a blessing for America because there are people waking up now that had Romney been elected, who, by the way, on the last 2 weeks of The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, was a very staunch supporter of Obamacare. He said, oh, once people get used to it, they'll like it. And
wow.
So anybody that thinks there was going to be a significant difference between Mitt Romney and Obama really needs to pay attention to the things that he actually says. And, as soon as he said that, I was like, yeah. back to what Cindy was saying, though, it's amazing sometimes what a little bit of lighting change can do, And it's funny because you don't notice it when you're up there. You're like, oh, this is great. Sun's up. Bright. It's wonderful. And you just wonder, why aren't we getting any interaction? I know that they can see us up here. But it's like, if the sun's behind you, they're like, I know there's people up there, but I can't read what they're saying because the sun's making me blind, and so that's just something to keep in mind. But, that's like something, I know a lot of people, I'm sure they look at us while we're up there and they think, wow, those people are something, they have this conception in their head that, we're like, professional protesters, because there are those out there. And,
yeah, like we're strange.
Yeah, or we have people drive by and it's funny because they'll scream at us, this is on a Saturday, you need to get a job. We're like, it's Saturday. And then suddenly they don't have anything else to say, but I know, but only out of all the thousands of people, and it really has been thousands of people that I have talked to. I mean, my friend list on Facebook had like maybe 75 people on it before it started now, and I'm coming up on 2000, I think. I would have to go look at it, but I mean, you know, it's in the it's well over 1,000 people, and I've talked to far more than aren't even in my friends list, and only a handful of them had ever protested or rallied or been even involved in politics before. And it's always just amazing to me to see the people that you know, for the first time in their life have stood up and gotten involved in what's going on. Even, you know, they may not know everything there is to know. I mean, I know I don't know everything. The people ask me details about certain scandals. It's like, you know, look, I'll be honest. I can tell you everything there is to know about this and this and this and this and this, you know, at least the important points of it. But I honestly know very little about, you know, about, well, like the TPP, for example. I tried to read that law. Has anybody ever tried to read that treaty before? Oh, my gosh. It's a nightmare, you know. But, you know, then you get things like, and I'm not going to say names because I don't want to put anybody out there, but people that have told me that they were going to kill themselves before they found overpasses because of traumatic things in their lives that you know, were just overwhelming to them, and they stood out there and felt something inside that they hadn't felt in a very, very long time. And you know, what do you say to that? You know, what do you say to that? I mean, when you know, and you know, a person that had a, you know, a fear of people because they were viciously attacked and put in the hospital several years before and had literally become a shut-in, and then when they, you know, they saw people out on that overpass and they found, you know, they saw where to go because they saw that sign that said overpasses.org, and they went and found it and then found it on Facebook, and they got involved, and for the first time in years got out in public and they thank you for it. I mean, what do you say to that? I mean, it's, you know, if nothing,
you know, James,
ever came
another...
out of what this has happened, if it helped just those two people, it was every minute that has been spent doing this, every battle I fought, has been worth it.
Yeah, well, you know, you were saying okay, you were saying earlier, James, when the congressman was speaking, that you were disappointed that he never mentioned, or none of the people there mentioned impeachment, and I just wanted to encourage you and say you got to remember that sometimes these Tea Party crowd is some of the older people. A lot of them aren't on the internet; they're just listening to Fox, and Fox is not talking about impeachment. Fox doesn't want to talk about impeachment. They probably, unless they've driven under an overpass somewhere or bumped into an email from somebody accidentally, they don't even know that there's 28 congressmen now signed on to impeachment papers. So, you know, if Fox participates in the distraction. They want you to be distracted over there in the South China Sea or the Indian Ocean looking for an airliner, okay? They are in on the basic. They have their differences. Fox represents the elite GOP, the establishment GOP. Okay?
Yes, they do.
They are definitely in a battle with the Democrat Party, but it's not for the reasons that you and I are in a battle. Their ideologies are not that much different. They only differ in how it is implemented, how the plan is implemented.
Or who
has control. Who's going to be in control of the whole thing when it all comes down and we have a one-world order? Who's going to be in control of that? And you got your Crimea situation over here. This could be, and, you know, Dan, you had said that, you know, a lot of stuff, but a lot of stuff that's going on looks a whole lot like this is a big show for us. It's a big show. It's Obama pretending to not like, it's Putin pretending not to like Obama. For the sake of the blind sheeple over here in America, the blind sheeple over there in Russia, so they don't see what's actually going on. The plan is to dump dollars, dump American dollars. Russia's going to do it. China's making some kind of a news announcement in April. That could be what they're talking about, dumping and starting to buy oil with different dollars.
The yen.
Whether they're going to use euros or yen, or I don't know what they're going to use.
It's going to be gold and rupees and kopecks. Yeah.
But
when you look at the stock market, at the condition it's in compared to 1929, there's a reason that they're talking about quitting using the dollar, because unless something dramatic happens with our stock market, about the third week of April, we're looking at a crash at the level of 1929. And that's why they're talking about doing that. That's, you know, I'm assuming that, you know, the multiple sources I found that on are accurate. I'd like to think when you run across a source that's been accurate several times, you know, many, many times in the past, that they are. I mean, we're looking at, unless something happens dramatically to improve our economy, we're looking at a major economic downturn the third or fourth week of April of this year. And I mean, I hate to say that because it sounds like conspiracy theory, and I hope I'm wrong.
Look, the thing is, people have been predicting the end times or the coming of the Messiah or crashes of various kinds just about every week since people were around. And sometimes they're right, and we pointed that. See, look, they were right. More often they're not. At this point, I have a really, really hard time predicting what's going to happen tomorrow. Okay, I don't know. If I did, I would go buy the lottery ticket. All right. What I do know is what has happened. That's clear. At this point, we still have the access to what's really occurred, and without the revisionist history, and some of us have good memories and can remember things that are no longer easily accessible in the media. I know what's happening now to an extent because the Internet is still free somewhat and because people talk to each other. As far as what's going to happen, the only thing that you can speculate is what they intend to have happen and what the likely responses will be. What it looks like is that if I were in charge of the world power structure and I wanted to be firmly in charge and I wanted absolutely no opposition whatsoever, I would destroy the entire world economy. Because let's put it this way, if I had $100 billion and suddenly all I have is $1 billion, I'm still rich, especially if the average person doesn't have a net worth of $100,000 or $200,000 or $500,000, but has a net worth of $20.
Yeah.
And if I had that $1 billion and I was the only one who could provide them with food and I was the only one who would allow them access to water or energy supplies, and if they had to go where I told them to get those things and do what I told them to get those things, I'd pretty much be a king, wouldn't I, or an emperor. Well, this is an old story. It's what they've always wanted. But today they have the technology to do these things in a way that if we lose, we may never get it back. On the other hand, we have the technology, and the technology has given us something more than just instantaneous communication and the ability to access all this information. What it's given us is education. Right now in the world, all these stupid people, all these sheeple, aren't so damn dumb. Most of these people have a better understanding and a better grasp of what's occurring than any people in the history of the United States or the history of the world. Now, looking at the way things are, people seem stupid because they refuse to believe things. We're the type of people who don't want to see unpleasant realities. How many people do you know who are in a bad job or a bad relationship, and they know it's bad, and they can see all the reasons it's bad, but they just deny it to themselves because it's easier to stay with it, and they really want it to work, and they don't really have anywhere else to go. But when the thing blows up, when that crazy person, you know, takes your pet and boils it, you know, if anyone saw that movie with Glenn Close years ago, or when the job fires you, or, you know, suddenly you're adrift. And all those lessons hit home, and you start realizing those things that you knew already. I think that's what's happening right now across the world, not just in America. There are freedom movements everywhere rising because people are realizing the things that they already knew. It will take a great deal of effort to kill enough people to make that go away, to turn us into a dark age. It would take a great deal of time to further dumb us down to the point where nobody knows anything, nobody remembers anything. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they may try. I'm praying they don't, because it would mean an awful lot of destruction and devastation, a lot of innocence being harmed. But
Let me bring something up before you leave that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, earlier you talked about Venezuela, what's going on there, and, you know, different parts of the world that we're just kind of ignoring. But this is very significant. I have a couple of friends in Venezuela,
okay.
And they give me, you know, they give me videos and things of what's going on. And, you know, they talk about things like losing their Facebook account, getting it shut down. They talk about they have to talk like in riddles on there so that people, you know, can't say you're anti-government or whatever. They show videos to show what's going on. There are a few Spanish online newspapers that are, you know, putting up the videos and things like that. And like they have one here that's more evidence that the government is shooting with 9mm at the public. They're using high-powered rifles and guns and AKs and things like that. And there's just right now, it's like they have to prove things because the general population, I mean, if you've never been to one of those, Mexico is close. The way they have their cities, their villages, they're just concrete block stuff and in the good places, and then in the bad places, it's just wood sticks and pieces of corrugated metal and just whatever they can put a house together with, that's what they live under. And those people have no idea what's going on. And so it's only the richer people that are passing information around via the Internet.
But this is America, and even our poorest people are fairly rich in knowledge and in resources, fairly, compared to other countries in the world.
That's the
but
way
real quick, folks, real quick,
Cindy,
real quick, and James and Dan, real quick, I just want to let folks know that there's only about 5 minutes left, a little bit more than that, of the live portion here of the show, which, of course, the extended version will be also a part of the archive, which will be available immediately after the show. But if you'd like to listen or chime in to the extended version, give us a call at 347-945-7428. But if not, we understand, and hopefully you just go ahead and listen to the rest on the archives and share the show with your friends and family. We appreciate that. But if you'd like to listen in or chime in, do so at 347-945-7428, because if not, then you will, about 5 minutes, be shut off by hearing the rest of the show. And we do have Harriet on, and
I was hoping you'd say that.
Waiting to come in, and we also have Kelly Mordecai as well, and we'll be letting them in very shortly, so let's go finish the last points before I can bring them in before the top of the hour. Go ahead, Cindy.
No, Dan was speaking. I interrupted him.
Go ahead, Dan.
We don't have to stand on ceremony. listen, you've got stuff coming from Venezuela. What I would ask you to do is if it's something that you think is appropriate, that is something that is clean enough to put on, or maybe not, post it. Please,
okay.
I would really like to see this stuff, and I think it's really important that people understand. In this country, we have an awful lot of relative health, relative resources. They've got stuff, and they know that this stuff means something to them. And they've got their families, which everybody has and everyone cares about. If at this point, any government, whether it was a foreign government or our own, were to attempt to do what they're doing in Venezuela or other places in the world, they would be met with armed resistance. Most of us are peaceful. There's a few hotheads who really, you know, look forward to this because they're idiots. I don't look forward to it. On the other hand, just in my little town, just in my little region, I know literally thousands of armed people. They don't commit crimes, but they know how to use those weapons. And they won't use those weapons. But if somebody comes door to door and starts shooting their neighbor, if somebody shoots their dog, if somebody threatens the old lady down the block because she's not giving up her gun, there would be open warfare. And this is the only reason that prevents tyrants here, now, in the past, anywhere, from actually seizing control is an armed populace. The only thing we must do, there are a lot of things I'd like to see us do, win elections, nullify federal laws, restore our constitution. These are great things. But we must retain individual ownership of weapons. Provided that we do this and that we absolutely ignore their laws like they're doing in Connecticut, they cannot take us. There are more of us, and we're more motivated. Somebody working for a paycheck, somebody motivated because they want some power, they're pretty motivated. Somebody who is fighting to save their wife, their daughter, their husband, their mother, that person will give up their life in a heartbeat to save those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the key is whether we're armed or not. And the mm-hmm. thing about it is, look at our arms compared to what our government has to use against us.
Oh, please. And, look, it didn't work in Vietnam. It didn't work in Afghanistan. It's not going to work anywhere. Asymmetric warfare, without getting into too many details, is incredibly easy. They're cumbersome. The command and control systems that the governments use rely on technology, which is easily defeated. They rely on resupply, and their supply lines go right through all of our territories. They rely on people who are immune from anything but their cadres as far as influence. When the people that they'd be relying on are our brothers and our sisters and our cousins and our neighbors. They don't have what it takes. They don't have the blind obedience. They don't have the ignorant populace. And quite frankly, a 12-gauge deer rifle or a 38 revolver will do just as well as a saw machine gun, because remember, they can spray a lot of bullets really fast, and then they're out of bullets unless they can resupply. And they're cut off from resupply because we surround them. They won't do it. They can't do it. I'm not afraid of their drones. I'm not afraid of their satellites. I'm not afraid of tanks. There aren't enough of them. This country is too big, spread out, with too many people who are too well-armed for them to do anything to us. And quite frankly, I don't own an AR-15. I would love to own an AR-15. I can't afford one. If it came down to it, I have a piece of wood that is bent with a string on it, and it shoots a stick. And you know something? That'll get me an AR-15 if I need one. And I'm not going to ever do that unless they start shooting or rounding up people first.
Well, you know, Dan, that's actually something that I've tried to make so many times to so many people. Obama's going to declare martial law. And of course, I like to tick them off when I tell them, it's like, you know, I wasn't even paying attention to anything like that until, you know, just several months ago. But, I've heard that said so many times in just the last year. In just the last year. Oh, Obama's going to declare martial law. It's like, okay, stop. Stop right there and think about that. You know, even if he did, first off, the first dynamic you have to take into effect, we have a volunteer army of citizens who chose to serve, not Obama, but the nation. Now, certainly, you know, it's not implausible to think that he does have crony generals, you know, that will do whatever he wants. Okay, it's fair enough. I can go along with that. But just as easily as they relieved the person that didn't go along with Obama, is they can be relieved by their subordinate for declaring, you know, going along with a plan for martial law. I have far more confidence in our military to, even if the order came down, to not turn on the American people, but to lay siege to Washington, D.C. I mean, let's face it, they know what would save more lives. You know, they know what would save more lives. Well, try to control a nation with over 300 million guns, with 317 million people in it, where only 3% of those people are 9 million people, and as of 2006, our entire military, this isn't combat troops, this is everybody, from the guys in the kitchen to the, you know, to the supply clerks, to the you know, to the sol- you know, the, to the soldiers out in the field, was 1.4 million in the entire military, scattered over several hundred military bases across the globe, and we couldn't even control all of Afghanistan or Iraq when we were there going full bore, and yet people think that, you know, that we could control this entire nation when we couldn't control two nations that are roughly the size of Texas. Let's be real. It's ridiculous to think that would ever happen. And two, the logistics behind it are mind-boggling. And, you know, martial law is the very last thing that I am worried about, as long as the American people are armed. And, you know, like you said, Dan, if they start going door-to-door and kicking doors in and shooting people or rounding them up for, you know, because they won't register, well, then you are going to have an army insurrection, and there's going to be a very serious problem in America. And so, no, I'm not worried about martial law, and I don't think that governor in Connecticut had any idea what he was getting himself into when he signed that registration into law.
No, I was actually pleased that he went to that extent. Because,
real quick, gentlemen, I do want to get the other folks in.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
We could come back to this. I'm not too concerned with it either, but and I do believe.
Bob, your shows are not long enough. You need a six-hour show.
We could. We certainly could. we've got less than an hour already. And I just make a brief point. I think over in Afghanistan and Iraq, things of that nature, I think that if we would have done the full, you know, force of the military, I think we could have been much more effective there. I just think that our military over there, and then Afghanistan was hamstrung. We can get, you know, we could do a whole show on that, and maybe one day we will. But that's my take on that. Is I think we could have done and been much more successful in Afghanistan than we were. But I think that the bureaucrats in Washington, you know, hamstrung and tied our soldiers at least one arm behind their back. But anyway, I'm going to bring in Harriet because I'm sure she got some things for us tonight. Especially something she's been working on and will be glad to hear about. So thank you very much, Harriet, for coming on to the show. How are you?
Yeah, fine. Thank you. It's been an interesting show. And I'm coming from a different angle. I'm coming from writing an op-ed that started out just as a letter of concern to the Department of Veteran Affairs and Services in Tallahassee. And spoke to a wonderful lady there about my concerns about the veterans that I have seen written up and heard and know, particularly those who are handicapped and war-torn and are waiting for an initial application to be reviewed so they could have medical help and services and care. And they have been waiting 600 days for the initial application to become reviewed. Within that time, of course, their health deteriorates, and mentally their increase on suicide in the country is way up. The latest reports are 22 to 55 veterans a day waiting for care have been committing suicide, and that number is way up. I also researched into what would be available for them to have a number throughout the country to contact, so at least maybe they can get an advocate, because with an advocate and someone to speak in their behalf, things may be able to come about quicker. So I spoke to this lady, and I wrote her just maybe a paragraph of my concern, and she wrote me back about a week later, and she said that she turned over my letter to the person in charge of the Veterans Affairs and also to Senator Rubio, because she felt that my concerns were legitimate and they were actually is what is occurring in not only in our state but in the country. Now, two things. The veterans who are ill that are in long-term care facilities are receiving probably something along the Medicaid line, but to get their full services and everything, they're waiting for the applications to become effective. We know in long-term care facilities that there is the Department of Utilization and Admission, and they're supposed to be working on getting the benefits, but they're stymied because of the time element of waiting for the initial review of the application. So those veterans, I put in my op-ed, can call the Department of Ombudsman no matter where you're living, and they will come out and they will advocate for you and try to help you to expedite your services, because they focus on your patient right to good care. Now, those that are living under the bridges or living in homes or something, if they could afford private care, of course, they would be able to have it. But many of them also are waiting for pensions, and so they don't have the income to even do what they like to do. And this is getting to be a eyesore, you know, throughout our country, because these veterans really need to get the services and care they need. I wrote an op-ed. By surprise, it's been published. It was published last week. And Robert, if you want, you can put the link up, because I don't have the time to tell everything that's in the op-ed and the bio, but I think if people would go in and into the link and see what actually I had written, they will realize that this is reality. And what I'm asking for or hoping is for the whole country to come together to support our veterans no matter what war they fought in.
Well, right now, real quick, Harriet, right now, since it's after midnight here Eastern time, the chat is pretty much down, so no one much see it. So could you tell us where we can find, you know, what the website is and how we can find your op-ed?
Yes.
Harriet, I've just posted it on your Facebook page. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'm pleased, by the way, to let you know that your listeners, there are a lot of people like Harriet who have an impeccable background and who have not considered that they are writers or speakers or researchers. They're just people who are interested. And guess what? Harriet is a writer, and I was pleased to introduce her to Dr. Richard Swire. If you're in Florida or if you follow any of the works of the Franklin Center, Watchdog.org or the Watchdog Wire websites, which is citizens journalists, you can join that too. Dr. Swire he's a Vietnam veteran and a successful businessman in his own right, who was the editor of the Florida Watchdog Wire website and now has his own site as well. And Harriet is about almost 30 new writers, and we've got about 4 new speakers and at least 5 new organizers. And amazingly, 2 financiers, people with money who they're good at making money, and they just don't really have the time for anything else because it takes a lot of time to make money, but they're willing to put their money where their feelings where their beliefs are. And Harriet stepped up. And Harriet, I don't expect this to be your last article. And even though it's very good, I don't think it's going to be your best article, because there are other things that you're going to be writing about. And I would urge all of the listeners out there to find something that you don't think you can do and try it. And even though I'm way too busy, if you want to write or speak, that's something I can help you with. And like I said, it's not like I can guide everybody every step of the way. I'm still learning a lot of this stuff myself as I go along. However, I've had people help me, and I'm more than willing to get you started as best I can with a preliminary edit, just some views that I have on the work that you're presenting, and an introduction. And I'll also tell you, if I think this isn't the right thing for you, there's been a few who think that they want to do one thing and perhaps it's something else that they're best suited for, and that's not my decision. But I'll tell you honestly, and Harriet, I'm very, very proud of you. That's an excellent article.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, it is. And being able to get it into the hands of the senator was something that I didn't even expect. And so I'm going to follow that through very, very closely, because the Department of Veteran Affairs felt that my letter was warranted enough to be passed on to someone in the high officials like they are. And I gave a presentation on Monday to my GOP meeting, and people came up to me, and it was just absolutely marvelous, the response I got and the thank yous I got. This is can be a big voting section for our party if they feel that we are the ones that are supporting them and helping them.
And quite frankly, if it ever does come to any sort of real nasty, violent sort of trouble brewing, I'm not too worried about the generals. But I met Alan West at a meeting of American Majority back in, I guess it was last September. And I asked him as a journalist if he thought that the American military would ever support illegal orders, or would they follow their constitutional duties. And he said, no, unequivocally, they wouldn't. But my take is we're not communist China or czarist Russia or fascist Germany, but we're not the America we once were. I think maybe half of the people who are serving would say no. And I think the others are preconditioned to follow orders and might follow them for quite some time before they just couldn't do it anymore. The one thing that we really have to do that Harriet's article makes very clear is care for those people who have voluntarily put themselves in harm's way and been harmed. They deserve decent treatment. They don't deserve to be lauded as heroes above everybody else, because everybody who works a job and takes care of their family and supports their own children and helps their community is a hero. But they've gone a step above what most people do. Here in my little town, one of my good friends is a fellow who is a combat disabled Marine, and he is constantly working to help other people heal, veterans and others, and also for the political causes that matter. And he's been educating himself over the years. And from where he was when he was a young man and, you know, a grunt in Lebanon serving, to where he is now, it took a lot of evolution. And it takes a lot of time for a young man or woman, somebody who's 18 or 19 years old and gets out when they're in their very early 20s and has had no other real experience of life, to realize the core truths of what's going on. But they see this every day where they're not permitted to worship as they see fit unless they worship in certain approved ways, where they're being asked to do things that are dangerous without being permitted to use the tools that military is supposed to be able to use. They see the degradation and the disdain that this administration treats them with. And quite frankly, I want those people on our side. I want them 100% on our side, not 50%. I want them to, if it comes down to it, to just simply say, Absolutely not. And I don't want them to lay down their arms. I want them to point them at the person giving them the illegal order and arrest them.
There you go.
And you
of
know,
arms,
I just spoke to a veteran yesterday, and he's supposed to have some surgery on his hand, but because of his prior history, he can't go to sleep. And now the veterans are denying him his pain medication, and they said that they're saving it for people with cancer. And so he's walking around in a lot of pain, and so we just hope that the surgery certainly will alleviate the pain. Now, the other thing here is that the if you have a condition, a medical condition, and you want to take Obamacare insurance, and they will pay for you to go to a doctor, but they will not okay the medication for you. You will not get the medication if you have a pre-condition.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, but that's very true today. So I just wanted to pass that out so that the public can understand that.
We appreciate that, Aaron. Speaking of arms and things of that nature, we do have Kelly Mordecai on, and he's got some more information for us. Because actually we have less than a half an hour before, I got to start looking to close things out. As you said, Dana Webber's may hit a lot more time and things go so fast. So I'm going to bring Kelly in, and he's going to talk more about those raids of the gun stores and the collection of the customer records. Go ahead, Kelly. Thank you very much for coming to the show.
Thank
well,
you,
hey,
Tom.
Guys. Hello, all. I was tucking my son in at night. He's somebody that I would die for. It's one of the reasons why I've been working for Liberty for so long, because my parents gave me some really good things, and I want to, return that back to my son. And anyway, gosh, so many things I could comment on. This is kind of a sad state of the world, but this is a solution I thought of for the veterans. If they go to the border, southern border, denounce their citizenship, become Mexicans, come back across the border, they'll get medical treatment a lot quicker.
Yeah, and welfare, too.
Yeah, as illegal aliens, especially in California, but that's just kind of a, anyway. I want to get to the gun store.
Wow, that's pretty poignant there, Kelly. I like it. Go ahead.
Well, I try to throw humor in, but I thought, it isn't funny.
Yeah, it probably was.
It's a comparison that Harriet can use in the next letter she writes. I mean, study California. It is ridiculous. They're going to give them driver's license? Come on. They're not even. Anyway.
Well, I discovered something a couple of days ago that maybe we'll have time to share about illegal immigrants and how they're able to file taxes.
Oh, and get earned income tax credits having that never paid. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's another reason why martial law won't happen when the vets see what's going on. They ain't going for anything Obama says. Jeez. Anyway.
So what did you find out, Kelly?
What did I find out?
About that gun store.
Yeah. Yeah, about the... go ahead.
About the gun... All right. There's four things I wanted to tell with you about... Gun stories here. In Oklahoma, it was either yesterday or Monday, I heard this on the local radio news. Oklahoma, they have an annual meet and greet with the sheriffs meeting the legislators. It's probably typically a wine and cheese, whatever. Sheriffs got their guns, so what big deal happened for years. Well, when they came to the door of the state house here in Oklahoma, they were met with, well, you can come in, but you can't have your gun. You got to take your guns or leave. So they just said, F you, and they left.
Yeah,
I'm curious. Come to find out.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, Anyway, so one liberal senator from Oklahoma decided to implement his will. Are you out of your freaking mind, dude? You're in Oklahoma, a bunch of Okies, a bunch of rednecks. You're not going to win the next election. Oh, that's right. Liberals don't think. They don't think ahead of the consequences. So there's one liberal going out of Oklahoma at the state house. All right, that's one story. Another story, Missouri, the Senate passed a law. It's only in the Senate side. It's going to go to the House, and then the governor's got to sign in Missouri. Basically, nullifying all past and present current federal gun laws has said, forget it, we're not going to follow you guys anymore. Then we got Sheriff Lopey here in my county. This is kind of old news, but he applied, this is in the local paper, he applied for a M1 Grand. It's a World War II, 30-06, classic, semi-automatic. He was denied by ATF.
You're kidding.
No.
Wow.
He was denied by ATF, and then he started calling on the table, hey, what's going on here? I'm sheriff. I was in the military, served in Iraq. I was a captain in the CHP, California Highway Patrol, hello. They're like, almost like Gestapo, they're that strong. And I'm the local sheriff. And then they're like, well, I guess we got confused with some other Sheriff Lopey. Yeah, are there two Sheriff Lopeys running around 16 County? I mean, you know, does somebody put them on a body copy machine and there's two of them clones running around? So the third story I heard in Alex Jones, this is pretty fresh, and I'm sorry on the details because I'm working on a project. But basically, in Southern California, there was a, and maybe somebody can research it and vet it better, but, and I heard the guy who was the gun shop owner, the ATF came to him and said, hey, we'd like a list of all your customers. No. They come back, we really want a list. You know, they send him a letter and all that stuff. He's like, are you out of your freaking mind? No. Go get a warrant. So they came back again and they said, hey, tell you what, we'll give you a huge chunk of change for that list. I ain't doing that. Then he figured out things are going to get bad, so he went to the judge, got a TRO, or a temporary restraining order, and then this is federal judge, and then the ATF went to a different federal judge, got the warrant, went into his shop while there was even kids and families there, and they just grabbed whatever the heck they wanted to. There's just not enough probable cause for anything to do anything like that. I mean, this is a tyranny, man. And so that's kind of where things, I mean, it's just kind of freaky that we're, you know, of course, you know, some people are saying, oh, you know, I take a bar and then I start taking people out. No, don't do that. All you have to do is wait a little longer and a state will secede from the union, move there, and then you can join up, you know. it's getting interesting. And
So what was the reasoning behind them wanting the list? Was it stated?
Well, actually, they weren't asking for a list. What they were looking for was AR-15 lower receivers, which are that's the part that makes it a gun. And the rest of them you can buy and sell parts, and it's not a gun. These receivers had 80% polymer rather than just steel. And if they have above a, this is arcane law, but if they have above a certain percentage of plastic, they're no longer considered to be firearms. And the question was whether they were being sold as such, did they actually have that? So what the owners of the gun shops did was they locked all of the questionable AR-15 lower receivers, because they sell gun parts for people who build their own guns, in a cabinet that was secure. It's locked, waiting to see what the judge said, who had granted the temporary restraining order. The ATF did break in, and they not only took this stuff, and they broke in fully armed against people who were willing to just, I don't know, fight them in court with lawyers. They weren't presenting a threat. These were not thugs, and yet loaded full automatic weapons were pointed at them by guys wearing, you know, full body armor. And there are pictures available, which are vetted news source pictures from citizen journalists, things, people I actually know and know their reputation, who made it a point to be there, and they have good zoom lenses. And they took pictures of the ATF actually breaking into the safe. Afterwards, the owner did confirm that his lists of customers were taken. There is no justification for that. And this is why I will remind everybody out there, if you're buying firearms or you're buying ammunition, buy them for cash. Make certain there's no paper trail. I'm not recommending you break laws, but yeah, I am.
Well, California, we've also decided to get rid of lead bullets. In 2019, you can't have lead bullets anymore.
Because, you know, yeah, well.
So they're gonna, you know, because if you shoot somebody, they're going to die of lead poisoning? Or?
Well, maybe they figure there are certain politicians that have lead deficiency these days. in your diet. I'll also remind patriots that if you're looking for lead, you can look at wheel weights for cars. You can look at old window weights if they're not cast iron in old windows, and that plenty of bullets there worth of weight.
Batteries.
Batteries are cheap, used batteries, and might be a good idea to get a hold of these things now.
Yeah, some of these batteries have a nice little frosting on top that you can add to their diet.
You know,
the corrosion around the post.
I know an awful lot of people who are prepared, and that doesn't mean that they're bloodthirsty, and none of them, I won't associate with them if they commit acts of criminality or overt violence, if they beat people up or rob people. That's completely unacceptable. I would turn those people over to the authorities at this point because nobody has the right to do that to someone else. On the other hand, these people are quite serious about protecting what's theirs, whether it's a thug who comes to take, you know, a thug gang that comes to take their possessions and harm their family members, or whether it's fellas in uniform. And I will remind all of the listeners out there, and I know that we've probably got people from the authorities who are listening, if you're on that side wearing that uniform, you'd better think really, really hard about what's worth it. There's 250 Connecticut law enforcement officers who last week, again, barely reported, signed an open letter that was published that said, we will not comply with these gun laws. We will not put ourselves at risk. We will not harm or shoot innocent civilians who have become felons by a stroke of a pen and have never done anything to harm anyone in their lives. All right? Join the Oath Keepers, and if you're not willing to join them, at least have that in your heart and think about this. Who's going to protect your family? And are you willing to shoot your neighbor's family over a piece of paper that means nothing? Because if it's unconstitutional, it's not a law. It's null and void.
Right. Well, I go back to my son and how he gets it. You know, like if you watch the Lego movie, there's a lot of political subtleties. And one of them is there's good cop, bad cop, which is the fitting for President Business, who's trying to take over the world. Well, the bad cop at the end basically got toasted. You're just a minion. You're a pawn. You're worth nothing to me. Thank you for doing all you've done. Alex Jones is getting a lot of mileage, especially in the military, where he's explaining to people, look, you keep going along with this. You think they're going to care about you? And his history backs it up, because whenever socialists take over a country, the young people were all excited. They started asking questions. They get took in a back alley and are never heard from again. So this line of, you're with us. Oh, yeah, we'll protect you. No, sorry, you're toast now. What? They threw in the Lego movie. It's a killer. And there's some other things going on. You start putting things together. How do you stop people from voting? And how do you stop them from getting guns? You use a long-term plan of decades. You create felons. Oh, that's right. Felons can't own guns. They can't vote. You know, they serve a couple of years for what? They were dealing or doing drugs. Oh, wait a minute. Drug war. Who started the drug war? The Democrats. Isn't that interesting?
And they wanted to ban rock in the 80s.
It was what?
They wanted to ban rock music in the 80s. That was Al Gore and his wife's crusade.
Well, this is the point. There are people on both sides who are bad, but there are people on both sides who are honest and decent. Frank Zappa, who was a very liberal fella, he came out and embarrassed the hell out of Tipper Gore by putting on a suit and speaking with more education and erudition than any of the senators that he was testifying in front of. It was actually Richard Nixon who started the war on drugs, and he was a progressive, a Republican.
But it was a democratically controlled House and Senate at the time.
But it was a progressive idea. Let's not get caught up in the names and labels that they want us to use. We have the right to label them. And as far as it goes, I'm taking back the language. I have nothing against homosexual people. They are not gay. Gay means happy. Some are happy, some are not. It has nothing to do with their sexual preference. I don't like these politically correct terms that they use for everything. They aren't Democrats.
They aren't Republicans. They're fascists. And that's the word I like to use if I'm not going to use progressive. Because
oh, by the way,
yes.
guess who also started, who got us off the gold standard? Nixon. Who started the EPA by executive order? Oh, that's right, Nixon.
That's right.
I mean, I
big government, more intrusion, more taxes.
Right. Why do you think I'm a registered libertarian? I've had enough.
And you know what? We have a meeting tomorrow night. There's actually a number of meetings on this Article 5 Convention of States that are happening all over the place. Pennsylvania is a real hotbed of activity. I think we are the state in 2014. We're gonna show everybody else how it's done. And it's on this Article 5 Convention of States. And one of the groups that I'm associated with has a fellow from the John Birch Society, which is very against it. Our group here in Schuylkill County has actually invited one of the people from this Convention of States idea. And they're coming to give us information. Now, we're loaded for bear. We listen, we're respectful, and we've got some very hard questions. I'd like to see what they answer. I don't care who thinks they're a libertarian or thinks they're a Republican or thinks they're Democrat. I spent a couple of weeks trying to sort out these, and I won't call them petty, but these emotional feuds and these intellectual disagreements that all these little groups that we have in our area, just like your area and everywhere else, had, and just reminded them all as nicely as I could that we have far more in common. And that if we win and restore our Constitution to what it should be, something that simply tells government what it can't do at all, then we all win. And we have plenty of time for all of the discussions and arguments and the endless debates on whether we should legalize marijuana or whatever the heck it is. I'm fine with that. I don't even care that much if I happen to win or lose my particular debate of issues that I care about. What I want is the freedom to have that debate. When we lose our power as a people, the elites decide for us, and we simply do what we're told or suffer the penalty. Not acceptable, not in any way. So we're having this meeting tomorrow, and we're going to have people, some meetings I go to and they're buttoned down and they're wearing suits and they're business owners. And some meetings I go to, they're old people and, you know, good people, but definitely at a point where they're tired and they've seen what's happened and they remember how it was. And we've got, we've got these wild-eyed libertarians and some of the meetings I go to, I have to go stand by an open window because they're smoking that funny stuff. We got bikers coming. All these people are good people who don't harm other people, who are just as smart as anyone you ever want to meet. And we've all agreed that we're going to listen carefully, we're going to think about this, and we're going to ask them questions. Then we're going to make up our own minds about this. I don't care Levin. I don't care what he says. I like to listen to his program. He's entertaining. I don't care.
Hey, yeah.
I don't care what Rush Limbaugh says. I don't care what Ted Cruz says. I don't care what Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid says. I don't care what Obama says. They do a lot of talking. That's what they do for a living. I care what my neighbors say after they've thought about it. Because
hey, Dan?
Yes.
I'm just itching to tell you this. I know this woman in Colorado. She is on this. And she can get you some information that will just put the... Of course, you know about Soros and the Ford Foundation.
Yes.
Okay. Here's another specific thing. They're trying to get past rights for children that the federal government can reach into your home. Oh, little Johnny isn't doing what the feds think he should do. We're going to come into your home. Oh, look what we found in your home. Are these people out of their freaking mind? She's got some ammo. And the guy who wrote this, when he was called to the table on it, all of a sudden he switched it around to what it really meant, but it was too late. He'd already registered this. It's too late to pull it back. The real wording, he is deceptively trying to change it. Oh, no, it's still a good thing. I can get you in touch with her.
Yeah, please
and
do.
She's got the original, she's got the original screenshot and what he was proposing initially, and he's got his current one now. And it's just like, I'm sorry, the state, I can understand the state coming in her home, with CPS if they have to. There's blood on the wall, okay. I understand that, but not the feds. We already have enough enforcement within the states to deal with our own problems. But this will blow this out of the water at this meeting.
And speaking of meetings, Kelly, there's something going on a couple Fridays from now. So while we have some time here, because I only see we got about 10 minutes before, you know, I wanted to take closing comments and start to wind things down for the evening. So why don't you tell us what's going on the next couple of weeks and what we're hoping to do with that.
Well, what I'm hoping is to get there, first of all. I got clients that need to pay me, but I'm going to the California Libertarian State Convention, and maybe on a Friday night or Saturday night, depends, I'll have to look at the schedule. I just want to randomly interview some people over the phone. Hey, what do you think about the Constitution? And these guys are intelligent, they're articulate, and they love it. You know, it's good. It's going to be a breath of fresh air. So if it works out, yeah.
Yeah, keep me posted because we'll definitely like to, you know, we'll have a special edition of the show, and we'll we'll cover that, you know, live updates from you from there. That'd be great. Looking forward to it. Keep me posted.
All right. Yeah, I got to drive from the north end of the state all the way to the south end of the state, which is totally different culture, by the way.
But what if it's like driving through Georgia? Oh my gosh, I hate driving through Georgia.
Yeah, well, I'm talking, I think, 9 hours to get down there.
Oh, wow.
8-9 hours. Yeah. See, I mean, I'm like half an hour from the Oregon border, and I'm going to go south of Bakersfield, Visalia.
Hey, you know what? In a year or two, you might actually have to pass some border checkpoints to do that.
Right. Get a passport.
Well,
show your passport.
Well, yeah, there you go. Well, I'll go across the border and come back and say, my name is Jose. I hear free stuff. I'm here for my free stuff.
You know, I found out something a couple of days ago, and maybe we could talk a little bit about this. We only got about 9 minutes left. And that's, with taxes and how they're having, how illegal immigrants are actually able to file taxes when they use a fake Social Security number in order to get, I guess, as you mentioned, Dan, their earned income credit.
Well, yeah, which is income redistribution.
I was at a tax preparing place, and they were telling me about it.
Look, if I paid $10,000, just picking a round figure, in taxes, and I was able to get back $10,000 as a refund, that's fine. But what they call refunds in a large part of the populace, unfortunately, aren't money they ever paid in. They didn't pay anything in, or they paid $200 in or $2,000 in, but they get $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 back. That money comes from somewhere. It's not really coming from our taxes. It's coming from our children's children, because they already owe the money for this. And it's unconscionable that they would allow this to happen. And there have been exposés. Watchdog Wire specializes in waste, fraud, and abuse of government power. And we have people who actually get Freedom of Information Act paperwork together and go to the city, state, and federal in their local area, and they get information and they publish stories you won't find other places until the other places start to pick them up. And they have been. We've actually had a couple go on Drudge Report and some other places. And despite repeated exposés of this very problem, it still occurs. They don't want to close that down. But that's something that could be done very easily without a major reform of the tax code. You know, in terms of changing this country to be more of a liberty-based country, just following our Constitution, just enforcing laws against and fraud and abuse, existing laws, would do an awful lot toward getting us there.
You know, with the earned income credit, I know that's supposed to help folks, you know, who have children and, you know, who are of lower income, things of that nature, and that's supposed to help them out, you know, over a period of time to when they do make, you know, if they do get there, make more money. And personally, I really don't have a problem with that. I just don't. If anyone takes issue with that, I'm sorry, but I just don't have a problem with that per se, especially helping people out with children.
So you want to reward somebody. But you want to reward somebody for a behavior based on what the elites decide that they want to reward, and you want to take it from somebody who hasn't voluntarily given that money. Look, I work with people.
Let me get back on that real quick. I personally know folks who don't make. They work hard. They do what's right. They have kids. They're just not in an industry that pays a lot of money.
But the redistribution prevents small businesses, not mega corporations, but it prevents the small businesses from actually being able to grow and create jobs that are better. Look, putting a Band-Aid on a gaping, gushing wound, an artery wound, is a nice thought, but it doesn't solve anything. Healing that person solves something. The way to heal them is to give them the chance, the opportunity. And the government can't create the opportunity. What it can do is stop destroying the opportunity. I had businesses when I was younger. I know a lot of people who are in business or have been in business who would love to either expand or start a new business, and we're incapable. With all the myriad government regulations and the tax laws and now Obamacare, it's next to impossible. They used to say the first million is the toughest. If you don't have a million, you can't even pay your regulatory fees. You can't. You have to hire lawyers and accountants and still jump through hoops and hope that the bureaucrat will approve your permits and your all the required BS paperwork. I'm not saying get rid of laws that deal with fiscal mismanagement and fraud, or laws that deal with selling poison or anything like that. But it's a nice idea that somebody who is working minimum wage should have a higher minimum wage. But you raise the minimum wage for somebody who works at McDonald's, which was never intended to be a career unless you're on a management track. It's a entry-level job, or a job for somebody who's simply not capable of doing more. But for those people, you raise it to $15, you're going to be ordering with a touch screen. You're going to destroy that job. And then these people rely even more on government. So putting Band-Aids on these things, all these little government tweaks, don't hold any kind of room in my heart, because I think that they're actually harmful. They sound helpful, but they're harmful.
Well, and I'm going to bring it back, is where, what I'm saying about the earned income credit, when I talk about folks who, because I know folks who, they have disability, but instead of taking, government disability, they do work, and they do have families, right? And so because of their disability, they're unable to get, a job that pays, that pays better. I'm not saying you're raising minimum wage, but if they have, I think there's a certain amount that they get through, depending on how many children they have or something of that nature, their family size. So, what do you say on that?
I say that encouraging behavior.
If they're incapable, they're working, but they're incapable.
I don't think it's the government's business. I don't think it's the government's business. I think it's the society's business. I think the churches.
So what solution would you offer?
Well,
for that?
Churches and voluntary associations are one thing. Look, I've mentioned him before as a fellow in my town who has a condition, and he's not the brightest bulb. He's a really decent guy, and he's never going to make a lot of money. He's not capable of making a lot of money. But he is capable of sustaining himself, and whenever there's extra work to be done, we're happy to hire him because he's a hard worker and he's a decent fella, and nobody rips him off. So he makes out, all right?
Does he have a family? Does he have any children?
No, and I don't think he's going to. Having children is a personal choice between people, and if you want to have, like the fellow that was, this was a minor story that actually did get some play on Facebook and on the news media, you actually saw the story. The fellow with 22 kids by 14 different moms.
Well, that's a whole different story than what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but why do I have to pay for them? Where's the cutoff? Why do I have to support, to the extent where the huge chunks of my income, and I don't make very much money. I have no disposable income. I have not a single dime that I can put away in savings, nothing to invest in anything. And I make 40 grand a year. All right, it's before taxes and all my expenses and everything else. All right, why do I have to support people who won't or can't work? It's not government's place to do it. I will choose to do what I choose to do. I'm a pretty decent guy, and maybe my choice is to help with, you know, unwed moms. Or maybe my choice is to help with people who have developmental disabilities. Or maybe my choice is to help with people whose mothers or fathers gave their lives or lost their health in the service of our country as firefighters or soldiers or police or whatever. Maybe my choice is to help spay and neuter pets. I mean, your personal choice on how you want to improve society. The only thing I would do is reinstate a full deduction for accredited charities where 90% of the money goes to whatever you're saying it is, and it's a real charity, off your taxes. That's the only thing I would give. And then it's your voluntary choice. And if somebody chooses not to, well, guess what? I can call them selfish. I can urge them to do something more. I can tell them they're wrong. But it's their choice. And quite frankly, if they're willing to invest in a business, if they want to open a pizza shop or an auto muffler place, they're doing something for society because that's going to create a few jobs, and those people are going to be able to support themselves. And that may sound tough, but anyone who knows me knows that it's not that I don't care. It's that I don't see putting Band-Aids and trying to come up with all these convoluted solutions to basic problems. The basic problem is we used to have prosperity. We've spent all of it, and we're in debt. The reason we had prosperity was not the government. The reason we had it was liberty for people to create prosperity, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew. And the reason we're in debt is not people going out and being crazy with their money, although there's a lot of that. It was because government has indebted us. They've made commitments that sound really, really nice. We want to help people, so we're going to take all your money and take all your freedom so we can help people, and they don't help people. Ask the people who live in public housing or who get public assistance or have to deal with welfare or unemployment or disability. Ask the veterans who try to get help how much help they get.
And I think we're expanding the conversation more than what I was but I was just talking about about the EIC. We're kind of expanding it further. And there's a lot of the programs that you talk about that I'm not too keen on itself, but I'm talking about one singular program.
Everybody's got one program, Robert. Everybody's got one that they just think is a real good idea, and that's where the political deals come in. Because if you want me to support your good idea, you have to support my good idea, and the next thing you know, we're just dying from all these good ideas.
Well. Point taken. As I said, we're expanding that. We've gone over, unfortunately, with have to do that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start to. Well, we'll definitely have to revisit this, and I'm sure we will. So I'm going to have to go in and start shutting things down. So we'll go with you, Cindy, with any parting words, and then we'll go to you, James, and then we'll go over to each just spend about a minute, and then. And we'll have you, Kelly, and then Dan, and then I'll close things off. Go ahead, Cindy.
Well, I we always cover so many things. There's no way to recap everything, but I just want to let Dan know. Dan, I put one link or a bunch of pictures from my friend Maria Victoria.
I already saw that, yeah. That's amazing.
And then I have posted a whole bunch of stuff on my own page. And so you can just go there and kind of sift through and see what you want to look at. I'll leave it there for a few days. And I'm going to get Carlos's up, too, as soon as I can get through Maria's. I mean, there's dozens and dozens of them. I mean, she's been posting, over and over every day, there's something. And, all these articles about what's going on, and there's it's the same kind of thing there. They're trying to keep from doing this violently, but there's just a faction of people that doesn't believe that you can do it without violence. And so, you know, there's both things going on. There's people trying to work behind the scenes, and then there's people out on the streets, you know, using protests. And there's all different ways they're looking at it and working on it. But basically, they're just ahead of us. They're just a little ahead of us. They're kind of where we're going to be if things don't change real quick. Anyway, that's all I need to say. And James, keep up the good work. Keep up the good work, James.
And that brings it over to you, James. Thank you very much, Cindy. Go ahead, James.
Well, thank you, Cindy. I mean, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I mean, they're going to have to kill me to stop me, because until my job is done, I'm going to keep at this. You know, we've got a country to save here, you know, and all the children that are going to, you know, that aren't even born yet. I couldn't leave the world knowing I did nothing. And, you know, with that said, for anybody that feels the same way, coming up here on the 28th and the 29th of March, we're having a Patriot Wave 11, and we will be having rallies or protests, whatever you want to call them, whichever one you prefer, all across the country. It's the weather's looking better everywhere. Even where it was snowed in, they're flooding right now, but at least it's warming up. If anybody ever felt like getting up and just saying something, just do it. It's not hard. I never did this before July of last year. Never even thought about it before this whole thing started. So if you've never done it, don't worry, because most of us haven't. And, if there's a particular thing that bothers you, or if you don't know really what is bothering you, just know something's bothering you, just show up. Almost every single protest I've ever gone to, people bring extra signs because they're hoping you're going to show up. And so if you've been kind of waiting it out and watching and you're not quite sure, well, just take a chance. You know, take a chance, step out there, and you will be amazed just how enjoyable it is to stand with a group of like-minded people. I mean, you'll make friends that you have something in common with.
I'm sorry, James, but I hate to cut you off, but I don't want people getting cut off mid-sentence when things start shutting down, and I'm trying to get more control on that, to get a better timing on that. So I'm going to have to, at this time, bring it over to Kelly. So, but thank you very much, James. I appreciate it. Just I'm trying to stay within our time constraints.
You bet.
Kelly.
Well, all I have to say is, Dan Gray, I just sent you a Facebook PM.
I got that. Thank
good.
You.
So she is, Judy Spady is glad to help so that you can have some more ammunition and call these people on this. She is point blank spooked of the Article 5, and her and so other many people have been bringing enormous awareness that this is something that we need to shoot down, because the wrong people will get control. So anyway, but that's kind of all I have to say. I really enjoyed this once again. And I guess good night, folks.
Good night, Kelly.
Good night, Kelly. And we've got a minute for you, Dan, so go ahead.
All right. For those people who are concerned about the Article 5, I would urge them to go. Wikipedia is a good source. There are articles on something called Constitution 2020. George Soros, along with Eric Holder and Sunstein, Cass Sunstein, the regulatory czar of the Obama administration, came up with a specific list of Harvard-vetted detailed proposals on how they want to change the Constitution. And Article 5 fits right in with what they want to do. Read it. That's their own words. As far as the 29th, I see that in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, is going to have overpasses for America in Allegheny. We don't have anything on the eastern end of the state, but maybe we should. Also, on the 29th, it's amazing how many events. in Pennsylvania, there's going to be a massive yearly gun rally at the state capitol. Last year, I think we had about, it was either 5 or 8,000 people. We're expecting 10,000 this year, and it's growing. There's numerous events. There's a Common Core event that day, and these are all local. Look on your Facebook. Look in your, Freedom Connector, that's from the FreedomWorks people. Find local groups. Look at their events. There is something going on almost every day of the week and all weekend long. Something in your area, something you're interested in. If it's not one thing, it's another. And you will, as James said, stand with like-minded people. They won't agree with you about everything, but you'll have far more in common, and you'll be doing something. And we really need to do things. We need to attack these people on all fronts. The progressives have had a targeted, careful campaign that relied on us doing nothing. Every time we attack them, they have to defend. Every time we do that, that costs them time, that costs them money, and that costs them credibility. How many times in the last several years have you seen where all of a sudden an issue takes flight and everyone's imagination, and they realize that this is important to them, and the federal government and the state government and the city governments full of progressives back down. They just stop. Now, they're going to try it again, but we can't discourage them. We can beat them.
So with that, folks, I have to shut things down. Thank you very much, everyone who came in. Thank you, Harriet, if you're still out there. I know she had to go, but we want to thank you for coming on, as well as you, James, and Kelly, and Cindy, and, of course, Dan. And for all those listening out there, and for next Wednesday, we will have an interview with a Rick Feinberg, who is running in Nevada. So we'll be welcoming him on. So looking forward to that. And so look forward to not this Friday, but next Friday. We'll keep you posted on whether we'll have a show with Kelly over there with the Libertarians. Looking forward to that. So keep you posted, Kelly. And so thank you, everyone, and whoever's listening, whether you're listening from the live tonight or the archives, definitely share the link and get a lot of the information we put forth here with the panelists tonight, and we appreciate it. So take care and have a good night. And, of course, check out the Patriot Journalist Network at www.patriotjournalist.com, as well as the website for Bard's Logic Political Talk at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. So take care, everyone. Have a good night. And I will end tonight as I do on all the shows, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. But you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. Thank you very much, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.